Shut your raggedy ass up and sit the fuck down.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 124 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And we've got a big show. What's coming up?
The topic is huge. It's our top three performances that changed your opinion of that actor or actress.
Ooh, and I've no idea what's coming.
No.
Usually when we do these kind of topics, I have an inkling of what sort of things you're going to come with, but I have no clue what you're going to say today.
Well, we're going to find out. Our main review is not going to be The Dead Don't Die.
No.
No. Instead, it's going to be Stuba.
Yes, mainly because we couldn't find any cinemas near us that were showing The Dead Don't Die.
No release time.
And our rewatch this time round is Jackie Brown, a fantastic and highly underrated, in my opinion, Quentin Tarantino movie.
I can't wait to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right.
Also, it's going to be time for a brand new quiz. Now, usually I do this little thing and tease and then I say, do you want to know what the title is?
Yeah. Here we go.
Find out later.
We fell for it. Our movie masturbate on this particular episode is our great Scott. It's Ridley Scott.
That's massive.
I wonder what I'll pick.
Stick around, listeners.
I really don't know. The Duelists, perhaps?
Maybe. What? You never know. Stranger things have happened. Speaking of Stranger Things, no, we'll leave that to the end. We'll also have all the usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll have our pop culture recommendations of the week and we'll have a lot of prizes to give away. Before we get into the meat of the show, however, we would be remiss if we did not discuss the big Marvel panel that occurred at San Diego Comic-Con yesterday. Holy shit.
I'm shooketh.
The first thing I have to start with is that they've announced a Blade reboot starring Mahershala Ali.
Insane.
That is the most impeccable, perfect casting you could possibly get.
You know my feelings on Mr. Ali. Mm-hmm. I bloody love this man. And it's perfect casting. I am so pumped for it.
I can't wait for it. Like you said, great casting. And in Green Book, I thought he was amazing. But now go and give him a massive blade walking around killing people. Sign me up. Do you know what I mean? That is what I want to see.
Too good indeed.
I really hope that they give Wesley Snipes some sort of role in it, though.
Yeah.
I want him to be like a mentor figure or something. They've got to find a place for him, haven't they?
I think that could happen. I mean, he's so synonymous with the Blade character. I think he'll find a place in there.
Gemma, I saw some of your tweets today with regards to it. There was a particular film that you were very jazzed about, wasn't there?
Yeah, I did.
Wow, you sound really jazzed. What film is it?
No, I'm proper jazzed. It's Thor. Love and Thunder. Not only that, I mean, we're going to see Chris Hemsworth. We're going to have Taika Waititi's godliness of directorial bliss. But we can have a female Thor.
Mm-hmm.
Natalie fucking Portman, y'all.
Natalie's back.
I think this could be the performance that we then forgive her for doing Star Wars.
Yeah.
I've already forgiven her for that.
Yeah. Have you seen the logo? It's like something you get in like an 80s sort of like Thundercats.
He-Man. Looks like He-Man.
Oh, He-Man, yeah.
Golden Axe.
Golden Axe, all this sort of stuff. Mm. I want that on a t-shirt now. The film can be shite.
If you give me a
t-shirt, baseball cap, anything with that logo on, I am absolutely sold.
So that one's going to be amazing. I can't wait to see Natalie Portman as the female Thor. And then we've also had the announcement of the new Doctor Strange film with the amazing title, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness.
That's awesome.
And they've hinted that it's going to be the first almost horror film in the Marvel genre, so that'll be interesting.
You can hear me and Gemma gushing right now over this one. That's going to be awesome.
That'll be fantastic. We had confirmation of films that we knew were coming. The Eternals, starring Salma Hayek and Angelina Jolie, Kumail Nanjiani.
Yes!
An amazing cast. Shang-Chi with the first American-Asian lead character in a Marvel film, and Black Widow, which we knew was coming. They've been filming it for a month, so it'd be a shame if they hadn't announced it. We're not bothering with it. But one of the great things is that David Harbour's in it.
Yes.
I bloody love David Harbour.
Yeah. You bloody love him.
I bloody love David
Old
Harbour.
Old Hopper. We'll forgive him for Hellboy.
There's so much stuff as well. The Loki stuff's coming out.
The TV,
I'm going to have to subscribe to another service. When that launches, I don't care if it's £25 a month. I'm paying it all.
Yeah, I'm more intrigued about What If.
Yes.
Yes, the animated series.
Because I think, obviously, with the events that happened in Endgame, where you could go into all these different universes, this kind of opens it up a little bit more. So I'm jazzed for it.
That would be very cool. And although they're not part officially of Phase 4, they're more likely to be part of Phase 5. Kevin Feige did say that we are getting the next Captain Marvel, the next Guardians of the Galaxy, and the next Black Panther.
Yeah, boy!
They didn't mention Spider-Man, but I think based on what happened in Homecoming, or Far From Home, we know that's coming as well. And he also hinted, without being too official, too specific, he hinted at a Fantastic Four and an X-Men movie as well.
God Christ. Almighty!
Holy shit.
I can put the cherry on the top for you, Ben, as
go
well.
Oh, here we go.
Join the Kevin Smith panel. There we go. Get ready. Take a deep breath. We should be getting Clerks 3.
I think I'm about to pass out.
I don't even...
Do you know what the sad thing is?
I can't even...
We allowed that to happen and there's nothing we can do to change it.
Well, we could walk out, Gemma.
Shall we?
we could stage a protest.
The shortest episode ever. Oh, and Ben, what did you think of the new Jay and Silent Bob reboot trailer?
I have no opinion.
Okay. Come on, we get the return of Holden McNeil. We are actually getting Ben Affleck.
I like the fact that thingamajig, Jason Lee's in it, because I like Jason Lee.
Oh, okay.
I'll give you that.
There we go. That's what he wants from it.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I've ruined a very good Marvel segment.
You came in.
Brilliant.
Oh, God. And on that, let's get started.
So to kick things off, the topic, gosh, it's quite a mouthful this one,
is
the top three acting performances that changed your opinion on that actor or actress.
Rolls off the tongue.
So good. I can't believe I actually got it all out.
Well
there
done.
We go. It's quite self-explanatory, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So Ben, give me your first one, dude.
This one will not surprise you. You well know this. It's Leonardo DiCaprio in Catch Me If You Can.
That's a shocker. Whoa. Did not see that coming.
As I've said to you before, prior to this film, I was not a fan of Leo at all. He was just that teen heartthrob from The Basketball Diaries that all the girls at my school loved.
Yeah, it's
and
a masterpiece.
Just reflexively refused to watch that film because of all the love he was getting just because he was a pretty boy. I didn't want to see the film. And then, of course, Titanic came out, which is a fucking horror show. And it all continued. And so he just went down and down and down in my estimation. And I also wasn't much of a fan of Tom Hanks at the time because I used to love him in his 80s comedy days. But then he started doing these Oscar bait movies like Philadelphia and Forrest Gump. And I just didn't want to be a part of his thing anymore. And also, I wasn't a big fan of Spielberg, as you know, because at the time I hadn't seen Jaws. And I wrote him off as the maker of schmaltzy, saccharine, kiddie shit like E.T. So you get the three of them together in one film, and I was not interested. But I read the true story. I read about, you know, Frank Abagnale Jr. And I thought, wow, this sounds like a great tale. And I really want to see it brought to life on screen. So I watched it, expecting to hate it nonetheless. Loved it. I thought it's an absolutely phenomenal film, brilliantly directed, brilliantly acted by Tom Hanks, but especially by Leonardo DiCaprio. I've now seen every film that Leo has made since, and I'm convinced that he's the greatest actor in the world. You know this, you know he's my favourite actor of all time. Even when he's in films that I don't particularly like, such as Blood Diamond or The Great Gatsby, he's still the best thing in it, and it makes those films worth watching. And arguably, his greatest work for me was his role as Calvin Candy in Django Unchained. So I'm very, very excited to see what Tarantino has in store for him in the upcoming Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
We don't have long to wait at
all.
I love Leo. I was one of those girls that you just mentioned that
had
a crush on him. He wasn't just a pretty boy. He was the prettiest boy in all the land. But he was great. I thought that he kind of had that 90s Generation X kind of feel to him whenever he did his performances, like Romeo and Juliet, What's Eaten Gilbert Grape, and Marvin's Room, The Basketball Diaries. I quite liked it. But yeah, he's on another plane right now. Talk about an actor that really progresses and rises to the ranks of what you may have seen them in the early days, like Critters 3 to now.
Good movie.
But it's extraordinary to see just how much he's developed in his career.
He's amazing. Just think of Inception, him and Nolan together.
Yeah.
The best double act you're going to get. But then with Tarantino, your favourite filmmaker, Ben, it must be just like you're just sitting there jizzing.
Mm-hmm.
And we get it again because it works well. We saw it work in Django so well.
Yeah.
And now he's back. He's got Brad Pitt. He's got all the guys around him. He's going to own that film.
He is. I can't wait. I'm genuinely like flipping out here. I've got the butterflies in my stomach.
It's like about two episodes time, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, God damn.
Looking forward to it.
It's going to be amazing.
This topic did come about because of you talking about this on a previous episode. Mm-hmm. So if you hadn't have got this, I don't know what we would have done.
Yeah.
We didn't know him. Great start.
Mm-hmm. My choice. I've gone for a bit of an action man. Jason Statham.
Ooh.
And the film that turned my head was Crank, believe it or not.
Nice, good film. Yeah.
Thank you. So previously, I found that due to his background in martial arts and his Cockney hard man act in Lock, Stock and Snatch, I felt that he was typecasted a little bit. Mm-hmm. So we were seeing that he was in films like the Transporter series, The Mechanic, The Expendables, which films were expendable. I had trouble trying to distinguish him from other characters that he would play.
Yeah.
Basically, what I'm saying is he was not my bottle of cider. Certainly no brothers, I can say.
But nice then, little plug there.
Thank you very much. That's a brother.
Should we toast to that?
Let's toast. Yeah, first plug the episode. Nice, all right. Nice. But then Crank was released and it looked quite fun. And the next thing I knew, I'd well and truly been Stathamed. He continued to play this tough bastard, but he kind of had a bit of a twinkle in his eye. He had his tongue firmly in his cheek. And most importantly, he was having so much fun.
Yeah.
And when an actor that you're watching is having so much fun with the story, you in turn are also having so much fun. And I just thought that he was somebody that perhaps I might have passed off as just somebody that kicks ass and takes names. No. Spy came along. Turns out this guy's got comedic chops. Now
that film's underrated.
It's right? Really underrated. Yeah. It's a very funny film and he is incredible in it.
He steals every single scene mm-hmm. that he's in. And of course his work in the Fast and Furious series, which now he's going to be starring with The Rock for Hobbs and Shaw.
Stay tuned to our next episode for the review.
Hey!
Can't wait for that one.
But maybe I misunderstood him originally, but I love the fact that he's decided what works for him, and now he's getting the vehicles to allow people to see what he can do.
Yeah.
I'm Stathamed.
Yeah, I mean, I think going back to Lockstock, in that film, you could see that he had comedy chops. He's very funny in that film. But then the next few films, his next, half a decade or decade of films, were all just boring, stoic action man roles.
Yeah.
And no one allowed him to bring that comedy side out again until, as you say, Crank, which is one of the wildest, weirdest films. I can't remember if it's Crank or Crank 2.
Yeah.
But obviously the whole purpose of it is he has to keep his heart rate up, doesn't he, or else he'll
die.
And there's one bit where he ends up having to shag the woman in the middle of the street to keep his heart rate up. And it's incredible.
And the second one, basically he's got to try and recharge his heart, and then he ends up boffing her on a race course.
That's what you need to do if you've got a heart condition.
Yeah.
Boff
a stranger.
Just
on a race
boff.
Course.
There we go. I will say that I think Snatch is a great film of his. That's why he had that kind of off. Then he had a lot of crap. Mm. Hell of a lot of crap.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't... The Meg. That was... I struggled. He was the best thing in that.
He was.
But he didn't have a lot to work with, so we'll forgive him for that. But in the new Fast and Furious, I reckon he will be just going all out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I want from him.
Yeah.
I think you know what you get.
I think he'll have great chemistry with The Rock. If the trailers are anything to go by, I think they're going to be cool together.
Nice.
Statham me.
Don't say now. That to him, because he'll need to keep his heart rate up, and he'll give you a good boffin.
He might just kick me in the face.
And then boff you.
Oh, God.
Oh, dear.
Right. On that note, my next one is Daniel Radcliffe.
Ah.
He's got the word rad in his name, and he's far from it. I don't care what anyone says. In Harry Potter, he drives me mad. This is one of the biggest franchises of our lifetime. Mm-hmm. It's huge. It's sold billions and billions of books. It's took billions at the box office, and they should have cast someone that can act. For me, he's wooden. He's dreadful. He's the worst thing in it. Yeah, okay, Hermione and... I've done this one before. The girl in it and the guy, Ron. They're not the greatest kid actors in the world because, I don't know, I find them annoying from the moment they're on screen. Yeah. He doesn't show any emotion. He always looks very wooden. He looks nervous and pale. And everyone's always like, oh, but he needs to be that kid. By the fifth film, he's still the same. I don't buy into him. I just can't get into it.
I know you're blaming him for being pale.
Yeah.
It's not his fault.
Yeah, he's anemic.
That's genetics, thank you very much.
But I just don't buy into it. I've never liked the Harry Potter films. I've heard they get really good towards the end. They're starting to get really more adult and just like the books. But nah, not for me. Then I went and heard he was cast in Joe Hill's Horns.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Hill, who we know is the son of Stephen King.
Right.
He's a great writer and he's got a massive future ahead of him. And he doesn't just kind of live in the shadow of his father. He's a good writer. This book is brilliant. It's all about how you cope with the death of his girlfriend. He gets accused by his whole town. When I read this, I was like, that person that's going to be cast needs to show emotion. His girlfriend is dead. How have they cast Harry Notter? Because he's absolutely shite. I was not happy. I went to the cinema. You know when you just got to put your hands up and go, okay, he's done me.
Is that when the police come?
He was mesmerising. Him and Juno Temple are fantastic.
Yep.
The chemistry on screen is brilliant. And credit to him, he carries an American accent all the way through that film flawlessly. He shows emotion I've never seen before from him. I don't know what happened. He might have hit puberty. Something changed. I have no idea, but it's brilliant. And now I've seen him in a lot of things. And do you know what? He's a great guy, having a lot of fun. Yeah. He doesn't do too much. I read one about where he's walking around with a dead body or something.
Swiss Army Man.
He's never seen that.
He's actually the dead body.
He's brilliant in it.
Yeah. So there you go. He's brilliant. Just spoiled the film there. But yeah,
I think he might not be. I can't remember.
But he's supposed to be absolutely fantastic, and you're both saying it, so that sounds great.
Mm. Yeah.
So I've got to forgive him.
Yeah, and because you've not seen the latter Potter films, he does get better.
Good.
As he gets older, he becomes a better and better actor, because he is like a block of wood in the first two or three. Yeah. Really, he's awful.
Awful.
Emma Watson. Is it Emma? Is that her name?
She
was pretty much all right from the start, but he and Ron.
Ian
and the Ginge, they get better as time goes by.
I can't believe he grew up to be Ed Sheeran. So he did well there.
That's rich coming from you.
I know, right?
We're a family, we stick together, we give each other the push. And as Gemma's sitting here right now, you're Ginger as well.
Hey, not
join the club.
By choice, her hair, Ginger. What's she thinking?
Come on, Ben, you've got to join in.
Fuck
join
no.
us.
Well, do you agree on that one then?
I do, absolutely.
Cool. Yeah. Let's go around again.
My next choice is Tyler Perry in Gone Girl.
Yes.
Nice.
I can see that.
Yeah, so Tyler Perry is known for creating and starring in some of the worst, lowest common denominator comedy films of all time. He appears in Drag in a Fat Suit to play his creation Medea, an intensely annoying, loud-mouthed old woman. He's in a succession of films such as Medea Goes to Jail, A Medea Christmas, Boo, A Medea Halloween... Medea Goes to Co-op and Medea Takes a Dump. And only two of those are fake, right? All the rest are real. I hate him. I hate everything he's done. He upsets me greatly. But then he appeared in Gone Girl with his turn as the slick celebrity lawyer Tanner Bolt. And he was superb.
Yeah.
He was so charming and cool. And you're looking at this guy thinking, why do you dress up in drag in a fat suit when you could be doing shit like this? You could be working with David Fincher and his ilk in every film rather than doing that shit. And I think he does that shit because a lot of idiots go and watch it and it earns him a lot of money. He's a multimillionaire from it. Yeah. That's why he does it.
Yeah.
But he's better than that. We saw him not that long ago in Vice. It was a small role, but he played Colin Powell. And he was really good in that. And then not long ago, I saw the first of the new Star Trek films, and he plays one of the people who works for Space Federation, or whatever the hell it's called. I'm not a Trekkie, I don't know. But he's in that as well. Again, it's a small role, but it proves time and time again that he can genuinely act outside of those god-awful Madea films.
Yeah, think Big Mama's House, but just without the budget, without the love. You know how much I go on about Big Mama's House.
I wonder how he got cast, though, because you go back by your CV, you go up to David Fincher, like, I want to be in your film. What have you done before?
Yeah.
I'm not hiring you. I want some serious role here that's going to back someone who's going to be accused for murder.
And you would think, him being in a Fincher film, it would be a case of Perry approaching Fincher and saying, can I, you know, audition for this? And Fincher going, I don't really know who you are, but I'll give you a go. Mm-hmm. Apparently it was the other way around. Fincher approached him, and he didn't know who Fincher was, because he doesn't, you know, he does his Madea films. That's the sort of shit he likes. So he wasn't familiar with Fincher's work, but he liked the script, so he did the film.
Bloody hell.
Crazy. But now that if I see his name attached to a non-Madea project, I'm genuinely interested and look forward to seeing him.
I'm sure he does, like, these American drama-based series as well. Like, it's got Tyler Perry's, I don't know, like, I Saw What You Did by the Kitchen Sink. Like, it's
that's a good one.
That's pretty good.
Coming soon. Yeah. So skip to the end. And they're very overdramatic, really sort of overplayed for, like, you know, unintentional laughs. Yeah. But, yeah, just stick with doing some really good roles, Mr. Perry.
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen his name for a while.
Yes, not since Vice. No. I think Vice was the last thing I saw him in.
Vice wasn't that great.
It wasn't great.
Anyone ever talks to me, I can't remember much about it.
No.
Shouldn't have to.
Mm. Never mind. Well, my second choice is Jack Black.
Ooh.
And the film that made me go, you're not too bad, was School of Rock.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Now, I was first introduced to Mr. Black in the woeful horror sequel I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh, God.
Yep. I forgot he's in that.
He was uncredited, but he played what I can only describe as a character that I rooted the serial killer to find and murder. And Titus, his name was, and his persona was grating, it was embarrassing, it was just, he just needed to just die somewhere. Also, what really got my nerves going is he had white dreads.
Oh no.
He was never one of those, like, it was just, I couldn't have cheered more loudly when I saw him get gutted by the killer. So happy. And it just made me very, very frustrated whenever I saw his name attached to things, and it made me approach him hesitantly. And a lot of roles I found was him just shouting, high-kicking, just generally being a loud mouth, you know, like when you stuff your face to the gills with Haribo. Kind of like that. But then I discovered Tenacious D one day, and I thought, well, that's not too bad. The music's really good. The videos are hilarious. You know, maybe I could give him a chance. And then one day my mates put on School of Rock as a movie night film. You know what?
Yeah.
I really liked him. He was still loud, he was still high-kicking, but what really changed my mind about him was that you could tell that he was passionate about the role that he was doing. So mm-hmm. the role of Dewey is basically he's decided to take on a school role and teach kids about music, but not just any old music, rock music. And it wasn't just a facade that he was putting on. He genuinely cares about rock music. And it came through when he was performing with the kids, when he was teaching them the lessons, and just the character in general. And I just found him to be a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, ever since that film, he's done some really great stuff. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I loved him in the new Jumanji reboot.
I haven't seen it.
No.
He was brilliant. He was playing a 16-year-old teenage girl. And nice. In the next film, he's going to be changing his persona again due to the trailer. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what he does next. But I like him. I think he's a really likable actor. He's clearly having fun, whatever he does. The cameos he's done in TV is really fun too, with Community being one of the best ones. Jack Black, I'm here for you, buddy. Let's have a hug.
I like Jack Black a lot because I love Tenacious D. He does do a lot of shit films, like Sex Tape, which is one of the worst films I've ever seen.
Shallow Hal.
What's the one where Gulliver's Travels?
Oh, dear. Yes.
I never saw that.
That's
I
not good.
I blocked that out my memory.
You'd love that one, Mark, because James Corden's in it as well.
Nice.
So
you're two of my favourites there.
I've never seen School of Rock.
It's brilliant.
Or if I have, I've forgotten it.
Yeah. It's so much fun.
Mm.
It's one of those films that you don't need to worry about investing too much time into, but when you get to the end, you're rooting for him. You're going, go on and play your song and get successful.
I love him in High Fidelity. Working Gemma, in the
Gemma
record
doesn't
store.
Like that film,
no, but we won't go there again. But that film, he's great as a character. You can relate to him being there, serving customers and just getting pissed off with everyone's stupid requests.
Yeah, I guess.
He's good in The Cable Guy as well. It's quite a small role, but he's good in that.
Nice.
See? Not too bad.
Not too bad. One day watch that film, Ben. I want us to know what you think about
School of Rock. It's never going to happen.
Okay.
If I didn't watch it when I was in my teens, I'm not going to watch it now.
Also, it's got children in it, Ben.
Fuck
children.
That.
Singing.
Yeah. Singing children.
The worst thing in the world to me is the noise of children singing.
Yeah.
It's like nails on a chalkboard to me.
The worst is carol singing kids.
That's not
happening. I will
pay
you money if you're at my door to shut up.
No, do you know what? It's worse than that for me is when little kids sing adult love songs.
Oh God.
I don't want to hear about your emotional wanting to do sex on a lady.
Do sex on a lady.
I don't want to hear about that coming from your prepubescent face.
No. I know a man that would, but we're not going to mention him because we're not playing bingo. Mine won't surprise you. My next one is James Van Der Beek.
Ooh.
And we all know what film it's going to be. Rules of Attraction.
Oh, amazing. I was going to say Friday Night Lights.
You know when sometimes, well, no, you don't because it's only me that does it, but you refer to actors as their name. So for me, he's always Dawson.
Yes. Yeah,
that's him. Oh, who's he? Stifler, Dawson. He will always be Dawson for me. I've never watched most... Well, I can't say I've watched it all. I've watched bits when it's been on telly waiting for other shows to come on.
Oh, yeah,
he looks like your typical American. He's the sweetheart. People want to put pictures of him on the wall. He's lovely.
He was a wet lettuce
there
on Dawson's
go.
Creek.
Everyone loves him. He's the safe one. You want to take him home to meet your parents. He seems that lovely, clean-cut guy. I couldn't believe it from the moment we see him wanking on screen at the start of this film. Playing Sean Bateman... You couldn't ever think this casting would work. We've done it as a rewatch recently, so you can hear our thoughts. He's mental. He's a jerk. You feel sorry for him at times. There's so much sadness behind his life. He is so, so bad. And by the end of the film, I pity him, which I think is the word pity for him.
Yeah.
He's so, so bad. He even fails at trying to kill himself. He's definitely not Dawson in this film. And he has no morals at all. So I don't know why I'm sitting there sympathising for him, but I do.
Yeah.
I think it's his story in the film is just so pathetic at times. But he's disgusting, isn't he? He's wanking, he's fucking people, he's doing drugs, he's going out there. He doesn't care about anything. And I don't know how people that would then go and watch this film because, oh, it's Dawson, let's go and see what he's up to.
Yeah, it's not Dawson.
It didn't turn that out. It did not come out.
Not him.
It's more James Van Der Bleek, but it's true.
Amazing, Mark.
Thank you.
How long did that take?
About a
week. A-plus for that.
Yes, thank you. But we all love doing this as a rewatch, but he especially in this film shines.
He was amazing, and he's become very self-aware in recent years. So he plays himself in the sitcom Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23.
Yes.
That only ran for one or two seasons, I think, and also starred Kristen Ritter. And it was very, very good, and he was very funny in that. He's quite active on social media, isn't he? He reacts to a lot of the memes, like crying Dawson memes and all that kind of stuff.
I love that one.
The best picture.
And Mark, I assume you're over the moon that he is going to be in the Jay and Silent Bob reboot film.
Yes, because in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, I thought he was one of the best things in it, and I can't wait to see him return in this. I really hope it falls that we can review it, so I can hear your thoughts on it too.
Oh yeah, I look forward to that.
You've got a veto as well.
I've never used my veto.
And you have, Gemma.
So have I. I've got one too. Don't worry. Look after you, mate.
What we'll do is I'll announce it. We're going to do it. Ben vetoes it. Yeah. Then you veto it back.
So no!
Veto the veto.
Yeah.
Danny DeVito at that point. He's also in the first series of Pose and he plays an absolute bastard and he's really good at it.
Yeah.
Like really ruthless, heartless. But maybe give him some more asshole roles.
Mm-hmm. He does it well.
Yeah. James, if you're listening.
It's all about the surname Bateman, isn't it? That's what it's all about. Yeah. That's how you know you've got to be an absolute arsehole. But a great film. And again, if you've not listened to our rewatch, go back and listen to it because it's one of our best.
Yes.
Just suck myself off a bit there. We're so fucking good. Ben, final round for you.
This one's going to shock you. It's Anne Hathaway in The Dark Knight Rises. Now, I am cheating a little bit here because I haven't entirely turned around on her. You know, it's a bit of a stretch to say I've turned around on her.
He hates her slightly less.
Yes. Yeah. I've always hated her for her prissy stage school manner. You just know that she's been doing musicals since she was five and always insisted on playing the lead.
Yeah.
She's just that type. She has one of those faces. And because of that, I've never found her believable. I've always found her performances to have this kind of stagey artificiality. She never seems real to me. So when she was cast as Selina Kyle in The Dark Knight Rises, I expected the worst. I thought it was going to be an absolute horror show. But in truth, she was incredible.
Yeah.
She was sexy, badass, and most of all, believable. I bought everything she did. She's probably, arguably, my favourite thing about that movie. I think she's flawless in that film. And now I'm not saying that I'm going to run out and watch anything she's in, but I now no longer automatically vomit in my mouth whenever I know she's going to be in a film. So that's progress, yeah?
Yeah.
You know, little
steps.
Now
it's just a little bit sick.
Yeah, just a little bit of bile.
Like saliva.
So, like when you've had too much Haribo, there's a bit of sugary bile.
Yeah, like, there we go. It's gone.
That's the second Haribo mention of the day. Does anyone any more for any more?
We'll keep going. If we get some of Haribo,
I'd love that.
Be very welcome.
So there's a film, I think you've seen it, Gemma, that she was in. Is it called Colossal?
Colossal, yes.
Yeah, which I've still not seen, but I want to see it.
Again, a complete different turn from the usual role she does. Mm-hmm. She's a drunk, she's foul-mouthed, she doesn't give a shit, but she's great. And again, believable.
Yeah.
Is there one something about Love and Other Drugs or something like that? Yeah. Like her and Jakey Boy.
Yes.
On Rachel getting married, her being a drug addict, I think there she got go. Her first These Oscar nomination are... for that.
I really like Devil Wears Prada as well.
Devil
I'll
Wears
say
Prada's
it.
Great.
I like it.
I like that film a lot, but I like it for Meryl Streep and for Emily Blunt and for Stanley Tucci. So I like it for
what
everyone else
cast.
Who's in it.
But I also like it for The Office reference. Steak!
Yeah. So she's turned you around a little bit.
To a degree.
Yeah, just as long as she's not singing I Dream a Dream, then
yes.
All right.
The next topic, top three actors that have turned you around a little bit.
Just one
just
degree.
Yeah.
Top three actors that don't make you sick in your mouth anymore.
I didn't think you were going to mention her, I'll be completely honest.
It's a big plot twist.
Come on, are you going to surprise us as well?
I will. My third choice is Ryan Reynolds for The Voices.
Oh, that film's great. Mm-hmm.
Fucked up.
So when Ryan Reynolds came into my life as Van Wilder, I realised I was not the target audience for that film. I thought he was obnoxious, smarmy, just an empty vessel of what could be a real heartwarming and well of kind of guy. But instead, I just thought he was a grade A prick. And I couldn't stand the way how he broke the fourth wall in that film. I just thought, oh, fuck's sake, just have a day off, mate. Just get off my TV.
He didn't write the script.
Yeah, but he took part in it. He said, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You know, people have their part to play. And it seemed to me that he was just going to cruise into his career as being this all-American cool guy, you know, who might be a little bit of a douche, but can pull a few laughs here and there. And I just thought, it's just too much of an easy route. I cannot root for this guy. I'm not on board. And then I watched The Voices. And it's a film that sounded completely bizarre on paper because it's about a killer who hears voices through his pets. And again, I thought, I can't see how it works. He's too smarmy for that. But when I watched it, he starts off from being this really sweet and likable guy and slowly descends into this really tragic madness that he experiences. And I thought, bloody hell, I didn't realise that he could actually be that multifaceted. And we're actually seeing him in roles that he is funny in, which is quite nice and endearing. And turns out in real life, he's a bloody nice guy. But this, for me, is probably one of my favourite Ryan Reynolds films. It's also hugely underrated.
Yeah.
It needs to be watched by much more people. You know, the way how he works with essentially a CGI dog and cat and even a corpulous Gemma Arterton and Anna Kendrick at one point.
And they're both great in the film as well.
They are indeed. It was a depth that I didn't expect that would work from the likes of Ryan Reynolds, but instead he completely surprised me. So I'm on board for this guy and a great film to boot.
I can understand why that would turn you around because it is very different to his earlier stuff.
Massive.
I've always loved him. I loved him going back to Two Guys, a Girl and a Pizza Place. Do you
remember
that TV show?
Yeah. E4, wasn't it?
Well, yeah.
Bloody hell. Maybe.
Well, who knows? It's an American show. Yeah. So we've got something.
We've got it over on something. Yeah.
But I really liked him in that. And I've always liked his kind of dry, smarmy, snarky manner because he's like a young Chevy Chase to me. And I've always loved Chevy Chase. Mm. So I've always been a fan.
I love him at the moment. Mm. Like all TV stuff, all his movie stuff. It's Deadpool, great. Yeah. Pikachu, that was the best thing about the whole film, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That film was wank, but he was decent. And even stuff like Buried, he carries the whole film on his own.
I still haven't seen that one.
It's pretty good.
It's all right.
It's the one where he gets like buried alive.
Yeah.
Most of the film, he's in a casket.
Yeah. And it works. You would think it would get boring. Mm. It doesn't.
Yeah, but I love his outside stuff. He even went on a Korean TV show where he put on a mask, sang Tomorrow from the musical Annie, and they had to guess who it was behind the mask. And that was during the promotional tour of Deadpool 2. But this guy's hilarious.
That could be our next game show. We wear a mask.
Wear a mask.
Is it Jem or Ben?
Who can it be? Shortest game show in history of Skip to the End.
Yeah. And he just seems like a cool guy.
He does.
I like him. Nice. My final choice is Zac Efron.
Ooh.
For the film that turned me around was extremely wicked, shockingly evil and vile.
Okay.
This
film is not very good overall. I don't think it's a good portrayal of actually Ted Bundy. I prefer the original Ted Bundy film from many years ago.
Yeah.
But this is the first time we see him be evil.
You're not thinking of Married with Children, are you? That was Al Bundy.
I'll give him that. I like that. But yeah. Oh shit, yeah, that's the one. In his early work, we know him, obviously, as, you know this, Ben, Troy, from the amazing High School Musical.
Of course
one,
I know
two,
that,
three.
Yeah.
So, so good. He never broke away for a long time. He was still doing shit like 17 again. We had those same curtains. I think it's his haircut that must have changed him. Even Baywatch, even though people are saying, oh, it's good, he's getting more funny. No, he's still being annoying. The bit where I started to warm to him a bit more, Bad Neighbours. He seemed better in
that. He's great in that. I love that film.
But he's still kind of be a bit jerky and funny. To see him take on a actual serial killer and do it well and look so much more mature. I don't know how what happened. It's like the opposite. It's like Big. I was going to say the opposite. He went even younger. No, he went older instantly. Yeah, even younger.
Do you know how biology works? Yeah.
So he aged like normal humans do.
But a lot in such a short time. He must have found Zoltar because in this film he's got this like beard stubble, his hair looks cool, and he looks like a man now. He doesn't look like a young kid.
He looks like Ted Bundy.
He does, scarily. He's mature, he's serious, there's no humour in this. He's out to kill people, but he's also attractive like Ted Bundy was, so that's why he could lure people into his car and kill them and murder them, spoilers. But, you know, those sorts of things. But now I respect him. You know, when he was doing some of this shit back then, I didn't. Bad Neighbours, I'll agree. He was warming. I was thinking, yeah, I'm liking him. Mm. Now I'm excited to see what he does because he will probably work with something that will be announced next week now. Christopher Nolan or Tarantino. He's this actor that people are taking seriously. He's not that singing little twat with curtains from the Disney films. And that's what I respect him for. And I'm excited.
Yeah, I think, again, it was that whole Disney trope. It's very, very hard to break free from that kind of background, you know. But we see stars from that are actually doing a lot more mature roles, like Miley Cyrus, you know, for example, as being in Black Mirror. But I do welcome that dark side of Disney-esque actor and actresses, because I think that's where a lot of the darkness comes from.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? It's like, you're not the shiny, sweet little kid anymore.
Can you do a pirouette for me? Oh, no, you're just going to murder someone. Never mind.
they can go too far with that kind of thing, though, when they want to go against it. So think of Elizabeth Berkeley, who played Jessie Spano in Saved by the Bell. So she wanted to go against the light and frothy thing of Saved by the Bell. So she got her quim out in Showgirls. It's going too far.
Just smeared it all over a pole.
And had the worst sex ever in the swimming pool.
Oh god, yeah,
that was awful.
It was like something from Jaws.
Yeah,
thrashing around.
That's a big Bruce up me. But yeah, it's not good. It's horrible. God, I forgot about that scene.
Yep, I think we all
she's
did.
Trying
yeah.
To. Yeah, that's there's an extreme that you don't go past, and they're doing it too much. You didn't need to do it right, like Justin Timberlake, that sort of thing. You play it cool. Mm-hmm. You get it right. Yeah.
Even Ryan Gosling was part of the Disney protege, and now look at him.
Yeah. He's a king.
He is king.
For me, he's what Leo is to Ben.
Also, you would want to boff him.
I'd fuck him in a pool.
Anyway. And on that, I think we should end the topic.
There we go. Thank you for coming.
So, Brian, come on then. Get to social media. Save me.
I think we should go to social media. So we're going to go to Twitter first. Byron Buck at Byron... Stop it, Mark. Byron Buck at Byron underscore Buck. Now, they said Leonardo DiCaprio for Catch Me If You Can.
Yes.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Jennifer Lawrence for American Hustle.
Okay.
Not.
I know how you feel about her.
It's probably joy for me. That was the
I would say if they didn't like her till American Hustle, they probably didn't see Winter's Bone.
Very
Go
true.
Go back and watch Winter's Bone. She's incredible.
Indeed. And Steve Carell in Foxcatcher.
That's the worst thing he's ever done.
Yeah, by a mile.
That was Mr. Burns' impression. No, thank you.
Simpson here.
Christopher Black at Metally Something said Ben Affleck, The Town.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good shout. Oh, I like him in Chasing Amy.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway. Heath Ledger in The Dark Knight.
That came through a lot. Yeah, yeah. Understandable.
And Robert Downey Jr. in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
He is brilliant in that.
He is, and it's very, very different for him.
Mm-hmm. L Queen at Lorna Queen 86 said Chris Evans and Snowpiercer. Yes.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that, yeah.
Edward Norton in American History X.
Unbelievable performance.
And Brad Pitt in Inglourious Basterds.
See, for me, Brad Pitt's done loads of good stuff before that.
He has, but then again, she might have thought, you know, pretty boy coming in here and, you know, showing his chest off and what have you. And then saw Inglourious Basterds and went, that's more like it. You never know. Simone at Moni0522 said Matthew McConaughey in Dallas Buyers Club.
Definitely. Big time.
Yeah, part of the Matthew McConaughey-sance.
Yes.
The McConaughey-sance.
That's the one. I'm so glad you said it. I would not have got there. She also said Tom Hanks in Philadelphia and Sylvester Stallone in Copland.
Yes,
so different. Yeah.
I know you guys are big fans of that film.
Yes.
Over to Facebook, we got Thomas Simpson said James Van Der Beek, The Rules of Attraction.
Choice.
Justin Timberlake in Alpha Dog.
Yeah, that's a good film, actually. I like that film.
That is a good film. Mm.
Yeah. And Mark Wahlberg for The Departed.
Oh, yes. That's a magnet choice.
Hey! Yes. Hey! Martin White said Ryan Gosling in Drive.
Yeah.
Which
I haven't seen much before that, to be honest. No, he did that, like, loads of lovey shit, didn't he?
The Notebook is shite like that.
Yeah.
Earlier stuff's great from him.
Yeah.
But Martin also said Will Ferrell, Stranger Than Fiction.
Yes, because that's his first one where he's acting rather than just being a comedic doofus.
That's right.
Comedic doofus.
And I say that as someone who loves him.
Yeah. Okay, so the third choice is Tom Cruise in Collateral.
You've not seen that,
I haven't seen it. It's crazy.
I think you'd really enjoy it.
Yeah,
that'll be a future rewatch.
Yeah.
Then finally, we're going to go over to Instagram. Paul McGinley at Ginch77 said, Ryan Gosling in Half Nelson. Now, that is a good film.
Yes, it is.
Mm. Nice.
Caleb Landry Jones in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. Because remember, he was a bastard in Get Out.
Oh, shit,
Then finally, Melissa McCarthy in Bridesmaids. I liked her. She's all right.
Yeah, I really like Melissa McCarthy. I think she's brilliant. Yeah.
So that concludes the social media.
Whose topic choice is it next?
It's mine.
Ooh.
Hey, guys, do you like to party?
Yeah.
I like to party too. So on the next episode, we're going to be talking about our top three party movies.
Yes.
We've been to see Stuber, directed by Michael Dowse and starring Dave Bautista, Kumail Nanjiani, Mira Sorvino and Betty Gilpin. Vic is a frosty detective who's out to avenge the death of a colleague whilst recovering from laser eye surgery. Stu is a mild-mannered Uber driver who's out to get 5 stars and continue tormenting himself with unrequited love for his best friend. Together, they form an unlikely team who are out on a day of stopping crime across LA. Will Vic get his man? And will Stu get his ratings? You're about to find out. So, yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
The suspense is
Keep him dangling. So, of course, we were originally supposed to see another film, but instead we're seeing Stuber. So we're going to talk about that today. So I would like to throw this over to Ben first.
Mm-hmm.
Stuber or stupid?
Ooh, I see what you've done there with the wordplay.
Thank you.
I expect fully to be in the minority here, but I enjoyed it because I'm a sucker for buddy cop movies, even ones that are just a 90-minute advert for a taxi app.
Yeah.
Which is effectively what this is.
Lovely. Mark?
At the moment, one of the worst films I've seen this year. I'm going to get this right. It was a slog,
mm-hmm.
and it was only an hour and a half.
Okay.
And for me, it was, and I wrote it down, I'm annoyed.
Here we go.
Stupid. I'm really annoyed. I really wanted
to get the credit
for that.
Our minds are in synergy.
And I love that you wrote that down.
I know.
You couldn't have remembered that.
No.
Bless his little heart. Well, I'm going to be controversial. I'm right down the middle. It's the type of film that you can watch in the background and step away for 10 minutes, but you know exactly what's going on. And it's harmless fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's nothing groundbreaking. It's not going to change the world. But I'm here for the chemistry between Bautista and Nanjiani. The plot is very paper thin, but it's all right. It's not bad.
Yeah, it's all about the acting for me. I was all up for seeing Batista doing goofy blind shtick and Nanjiani being a panicky beta male. That's inherently funny to me. But perhaps I'm biased because I love Batista and I love Nanjiani. The truth, though, is I think that Batista is overqualified for this stuff. He's a genuinely very good actor and should be doing more stuff like Blade Runner 2049. And I don't think he really should be pursuing leading man roles. He's not a leading man in the same way that The Rock is. The Rock is a 1 million megawatt superstar, but The Rock is the same in every film. Dave Batista's not. See Dave Bautista in this film as Vic. Compare that to Sapper Morton in Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
Compare that to Drax in Guardians. Mm-hmm. Compare that to the villain he played in James Bond Spectre. All four of those characters are uniquely different because Dave is actually a good actor.
Yeah.
I don't think he should be pursuing lead roles, trying to be the megastar. He should be trying to carve out a career as a really fucking good character actor in supporting roles. That's where I think his destiny lies.
Yeah, because, I mean, each one of those was individually different. And I think maybe in Stuber, I had a feeling that he was possibly just cruise control all throughout. I did enjoy the physical comedy. The car scene when he goes and starts driving and just causing havoc on the streets, I thought was genuinely funny. I really got a good laugh out of it. And pair it up with Kumail Nanjiani, I think they actually bounced off very well against each other. And I think Nanjiani actually bought out that kind of the serious role out of Batista to him. I dug it.
I struggled. I didn't find many of the jokes paid off. Honestly, I was sitting there going, this pacing is all over the place. I know what you're saying about our Uncle Dave. We'll make him legit family. You're right, man. Like, his one little bits, his one-liners in Guardians are what makes him. He can literally make you lol in the scenes. In when you lol.
Lol.
Who are you?
You're an adult, man.
Oh, my God.
You laugh out loud at him. He is genius. He is absolute genius. And you only need that little bit to be reminded. Like you said, as a lead character, he hasn't got it. It doesn't work. I was bored. I got sick of him. I really didn't enjoy him in this. It's pissed me off.
Did your patience of him bumping into things wear very, very thin?
Is there going to be a pun here? Or
no,
something?
No, no, no. I'm genuinely interested because you didn't like it.
No, I didn't. I just don't think any... You two are talking about how the chemistry worked and those two were bouncing off each other. I didn't get it. I thought they were great as separate people in other films. I'd much rather watch them do other things. When they're working together, I was like, why? Why is this film made? Why are these two acting together? They're good people.
Well, quite possibly. I think I have an answer for this because both actors are very high in their fields right now. Kumail Nanjiani is about to do a new season of Silicon Valley. He's just been announced to be in Eternals. So his star is rising incredibly high. And of course, Dave Bautista is Drax. Everybody loves Drax. Maybe with that being said, with those two being so high right now, they've just been lumped together and just been sort of a copy and paste movie of what we've seen previously. And
perhaps. But I agree with you though, Gemma. I think their chemistry was very good. And I think the shame of it is, as much as I enjoyed this film, it's not brilliant and it's not done well at the box office. So there's not going to be a sequel. But I think they kind of set up the end of the film perfectly. If they were going to do a sequel, if it was successful, they could have done one easily. Mm-hmm. And I would have liked to see more of them. I would happily watch those two guys work together again. But we're not going to see Stuber 2.
No, I don't think so. Well, one of my favourite scenes. So one thing I really enjoyed about this film was when they go to the male strip club. And Kumail Nanjiani's character, Stu, ends up taking love advice from a sexy Benjamin Franklin. But somehow, it's not as... He will never be as sexy as the Benjamin Franklin for Phyllis's Hendu in The Office.
Very true.
Because he was packing some heat. But I quite like that. I like that they were trying to, you know, not make these strippers as like meatheads. They're kind of made out for them to really root for Stu and say, yeah, go get that girl. I just thought that was a quite nice little scene. I thought that was very funny.
Yeah, I enjoyed that scene. And what I liked about it, what they tried to do, I don't know how successful they were, but I think they tried to have their cake and eat it because they wanted Batista to be an 80s movie-style macho cop who beats the shit out of perps. But then they wanted Nanjiani to be a very modern man who was horrified by that and the toxic masculinity on show.
Yeah, it's okay to cry.
Yeah, so they wanted to show how awful that kind of 80s mentality is, but they still showed us that 80s crazy beating up perp stuff. So they wanted us to have it, but then be upset. Oh, we shouldn't see that anymore. It's very bad in the modern age.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, make your mind up. But I get what they were trying to do.
Yeah, exactly.
I like the action scenes where they were fighting between the two of them.
Oh, that was great.
That felt like it was a bit like They Live. It went on for about 26 minutes, that fight scene.
Oh, in the Sporting Goods store.
And I was like, that was pretty cool. And some of the direction there was great. And that was kind of, that was the bit I enjoyed as an action scene. But I'm struggling here.
The action scene that I enjoyed the most was right at the start. It was the fight between Batista and Iko Uwais in the hotel.
Oh, yes.
When they're beating the shit out of each other in the hotel room. And my favourite bit of direction direction is when Uwais is jumping down the balconies.
Yes.
And then Batista jumps off the balcony and the camera is behind him and it follows him down as he hits the floor. Mm. I thought that was a great little directorial flourish.
Yes.
But I think they absolutely wasted Iko Uwais. This is the guy who was in the raid.
Yeah.
He's barely in this film. He's, mm-hmm. he's in it at the start and then in it at the end.
Yeah. And speaking of people that should have had a little bit more to play with, Mira Sorvino.
Yeah.
Somebody who's been away from our screens for years and years. And it was nice to see her back. But again, I don't think she had a lot to work with.
No, and it was kind of telegraphed, I think, that she was going to be the bad guy, because you don't bring in an Oscar winner, Mira Sorvino, to play the police captain and not mm-hmm. have something more meaty to play with. But she's not in it much either. I would say the same is true of Betty Gilpin from Glow.
Yeah.
Arguably my favourite thing from Glow. Mm-hmm. And she just plays like a drunken friend who you see mostly through a phone screen. Mm-hmm. Wasted, completely wasted. Yeah.
But nice to see Dylan from American Vandal pop up unexpectedly.
Yes,
it was nice.
As the douchebag manager. Yeah. I liked him. He was funny.
And the film started with Karen Gillan.
It did.
And yes. I thought, wow, she's going to be in it.
Yeah,
no.
Drax and Nebula.
Yes. And I love her.
Yes, I love her.
Mm. And I haven't seen her on screen for a while. Mm. Only a couple of weeks. But do you know what I mean? And I thought, great, she's in it. Nope. Got about 10 minutes out of her.
Yeah, it was just a cameo, wasn't it?
Yeah. Not happy.
Mm.
Set me up to fail.
Did you just give up on the film after that? Yeah. Because Karen died, you're like, I'm determined to hate this now, no matter what happens.
Yeah, I think the pacing, guys, it was an hour and a half, this film, and nearly, an hour and 45, something like that, and it just felt all over the shop. At times there was great action, then there was times where the jokes weren't working, it was just the two of them, and then I just didn't know what it wanted to be.
Mm-hmm.
Was it trying to be like a new Lethal Weapon for today, like that sort of buddy cop thing?
Yeah.
But it wasn't.
I think it was trying to be something like Lethal Weapon or 48 Hours, one of those kind of classic buddy cop movies.
And it was far from it.
It wasn't as good as either of those things, certainly.
No, it's a shame, really, because we skipped to the end like these guys.
Mm-hmm.
And we want them to have a bloody good film.
But it's a while since we're not on the same page.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Three completely different opinions, I think.
Shall we score it then?
Let's do it. Go on, Ben, you start off.
I'm going to be generous because, as I say, I really like the leads and I thought it was an interesting diversion, a good bit of fun, and certainly better than the fucking Lion King. So I'm going to give it 6 out of 10.
Fair play. Mark?
2.
Wow.
Just for...
Are you saying Hellboy was better than Stuber?
I don't care. We've got to go with the time and the moment that we're in when we review. We can't go on previous scores. So at this moment in time, 2 out of 10. It was the shittest film I've seen this year since we've been reviewing films.
And Gemma, before you announce your score, let me just put it out there that if you were to say 4, it makes it very easy to do the math, because then it would overall be 4. So just that's just a hint.
What did you want to go with?
I wanted to give it 5 because I'm neutral. But instead, I think, you know what? I didn't get very good GCSEs for math, so I'm going to give it a fair 4.
I love the influence.
Because I'm easily led, so that means that Stuber gets a skip to the end, 4 out of 10.
It's competition time!
I love how it waved at the end.
Time!
I did not expect that.
There we go. Ben, happy?
It was pretty good. You didn't quite stick the landing, but it was pretty good.
What? I like B plus?
No. I like the fact that you
A
went
minus.
Off. No. That's you went off piste. That's brilliant.
Yes. It was a remix.
Yes. So by that intro, you'll know that it's time to give away some prizes, but most importantly, announce the winners from our last episode. We reviewed Spider-Man Far From Home. I want to go and see that again. I was thinking about this the other day. I really enjoyed it. And to kick things off, we had some Funkos from our good friends at Funko Pop, who gave us a Spider-Man, an MJ, and a Mysterio Pop. The question was so easy. Who plays Spider-Man?
Tom Holland.
It's true. And Emily Lenton on email will be getting those in the post. Factory Entertainment came along and gave us some metal tins. Did you see the pictures online this week of E.T. and Jurassic Park? If you want to take your lunch to work, that's the one to do it in. Right, who directed the film E.T.?
Steven Spielberg.
It's true, and Ian Young on Facebook will be getting both of those tins in the post.
Good.
I want you to go to work, Ian, and take a photo of yourself having your packed lunch.
Definitely.
In both. Be fat for the day. Take twice as much food as normal just to use them both.
Or just sit into the tin pack.
Yes.
You know.
Last Exit came along and they gave us a Jaws cap. Really smart cap. Ben, who plays Quint in the film Jaws?
Robert Shaw.
Yes, it's true. I really wanted to do a pun, but I'm not. Steve Ferns has got that right on Facebook. Close Encounters. Now, that is a great film. They gave us a Devil's Tower t-shirt. What year, God, this is getting hard now, did the film come out?
1977.
It's true.
Yes.
Bane Gain is going to get that on Twitter. Also, we had an Indiana Jones t-shirt with the Marshall College design on. Who plays Indiana Jones, Ben?
Ford, Harrison.
It's absolutely true. Emma Bradshaw will be getting that on Facebook. And finally, from Last Exit, you can see this is all Steven Spielberg because we masturbated over him.
See the link.
We had the Blues Brothers Soul Food t-shirt, and this is beautiful. Elwood was played by which actor?
Dan Aykroyd.
Bloody hell, you're quick. Liam Bow got that right on email. And finally, Richard Sounds came along and gave us some AKG Bluetooth headphones, which are Y50 BTs. And we said, what was your favourite movie soundtrack? Martin Glossop came along and said, Pulp Fiction.
Oh,
great.
That's
shout.
A great one. One of our most popular comps, that was. And I saw some great ones. Not many Corey films.
What?
That is
people
a shock.
Aren't learning. That's how, that's about how you're going to win stuff.
I'm going to flip this table if I don't hear something Corey related soon.
It's very true. I know I always do this and you're going to be annoyed. What's your favourite soundtrack, Gemma?
Jackie Brown, believe it or not.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's a hell of a choice. Yep. Ben?
Spawn.
Oh! Yes! That needs to be a rewatch. That's a great film.
I'd rather watch the cartoon series than the film, if I'm honest.
For me, I reckon Almost Famous is damn good. Right then, so let's give away some amazing prizes. It was really hard to get anything Stuber related.
No.
So we're going to give away a taxi. No, we've got a set, I don't know how we're going to get this thing, of the brand new Ghostbusters Pops. So how are we going to tie that in?
Because they have to go on a job in a car, and Stuber is all about basically a car going across LA. So synergy.
That's terrible, fine. But it'll do.
That'll do.
Brilliant. What year was Ghostbusters released? That's to win the full set of the Ghostbusters Pops. Coming up shortly, we're going to be masturbating over
Jackie Brown.
No, that's the rewatch.
Oh, fuck.
Who are we going to be masturbating over? Ben, let's get
Sorry.
You to it. Ben, who, I'm leaving this in.
Yeah.
Who are we going to be masturbating over?
In the style of Gemma, Ridley Scott.
Thank you.
Why is it like a sat nav?
And to celebrate, we have
some
alien pops, which include the Queen Alien and Ripley, which is really cool. They're very, very nice. Let's say, not who directed, who plays Ripley in the films, yeah?
Yeah, I would love to see a crossover between Alien and Jackie Brown.
Me too. Hold on a minute, though. Did that person ever name their kid Ripley?
I don't know.
Yeah.
We need to find out.
Yeah.
I'll drop him an email and we'll report back next time on Skip to the End.
We want the birth certificate, please.
I have no idea why we're giving these away in conjunction with anything, but have you seen, again, we talked about them, we want them, the full set of 5 Jaws Funkos. I just said to Sully,
why
can
not?
We have some? How can we tie this in? I don't know. There's a big bite and I don't know.
No, basically, we'll skip to the end. What more do you need to know?
Yeah, we're a film podcast.
Yeah.
There you go. That'll do it.
Should we say what island... Yeah, what island? What island? That's it.
Go on.
Do the attacks take place on?
Okay.
That's really simple. Last Exit have come along. They love the fact that we're going to be masturbating over Ridley Scott. So they've given us an alien cap. So let's say John Hurt plays who?
Okay.
Nice and simple.
Yeah.
And they've given us the t-shirt I had on the last episode, the Blade Runner tee.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say Roy Batty is played by which actor?
Ooh.
And finally, for iTunes, I think we need to reward people for this. We're going to give them the 6 full set of Spider-Man Far From Home Funkos.
Awesome.
And we'll throw in a mystery box. Loads of stuff.
What? A mystery box?
Could be a dog tag.
It could be anything you want. The best way, because we don't always say this, to enter our competitions is to enter on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, or old school email. And we'll be back in 2 weeks to announce all the winners of this incredible...
One, are you going to actually tell them what the Instagram and Twitter handles are?
No!
And two, I can see out the corner of my eye that you've got some prizes for us there that you haven't bothered to give us.
Oh, I'm not getting forgetful. So, good work, Ben. I would have been annoyed. Talking about Last Exit. Now, they've given us some new t-shirts. So, I've got this one here from Videodrome.
Wow.
Gemma, here's one for you.
Nice. It's The Shining.
I love the print.
Thank
and Ben,
you.
For you.
I've gone Stranger Things.
Wow.
Very cool.
So, if you want to win prizes and hear the reactions like this from your prizes, the best way to go is skiptotheend.co.uk, because on there's our Twitter, which is at STTEE. STTE podcast, Facebook/skiptotheendpodcast, and you can email us, which is podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk.
Well done. It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we pick a name out of the pot of a director and we talk about our favourite film from that particular person. On the last episode, we picked out Mr. Sir Ridley Scott Esquire the Third. He's got a whole bank of amazing films that we have watched in our time that we have been living in, but it's all about what our favourite film is of that particular guy, which is Ridley Scott. So I'm going to hold on for you, mister. I'm going to throw it over to Mark first.
Okay.
Mark, come on. What
in
is it?
In space, no one can hear you scream.
Mine too!
Woo! If you don't know what that quote is, it's the 1979 absolute masterpiece, Alien.
Hell yeah.
I think we should both talk about it instead of me doing a bit, then you.
Oh, I don't know. Well, I guess the one reason why I love it so much is because the tagline mirrors exactly what it is in the film.
Nice.
You know, like, in space, no one can hear you scream. So for me, that instantly makes me think, oh my God, so if I'm in peril and I'm about to die and I'm going to have to ask for help or call for help, nothing is going to help me. And that's exactly what this film is all about. Like, stranded people on the Nostromo and there's an alien queen scurrying around the corridors. Who's going to live and who's going to die? I don't know. But watch the film and you'll find out, Mark.
Yes. It genuinely is, for me, one of the best sci-fi horrors ever. I really do feel that. It's got the suspense up there with The Thing for me. I think it's probably second after that. I don't know how you can fault this film. I bought the Blu-ray box set probably about 10 years ago. I probably spent 50 quid on it and I thought, God, that's a lot of money. The moment I put it on, it looks like it's filmed yesterday. You don't see practical effects like this done so well. It's actually perfection. The sound design, the story. I think it's one of the most perfect films ever made.
Mm. Yeah. What I love about this is the rewatch factor. So instantly you think, well, how can a film be instantly rewatchable? The reason being, when you watch it the first time, you think you see the alien, but you're not quite sure. So when you watch it again, you realise the alien actually hides itself in the most mundane of places. And it's staring you right in the face. And it just adds to that chill, that terror that the whole film is all about. But of course, we're talking about Alien, and we need to talk about Sigourney Weaver as Ripley.
Probably one of my favourite heroes in cinema history. She is just... The moment she walks on screen, she's a badass. But you see her get more and more strong. You see her take that mother role to Newt. You see her just become the badass of the ship. She's got a crew of seven. They're all guys. She's just, back then, they don't take these women as seriously. It's true in films. It's always about not all about this whole girl power and stuff. And she just proves why she's worthy of being the kick-ass motherfucker. I fucking love her. She is. She's one of the, I would love to meet her. She's one of the people in the world I want to meet. I think she's fantastic.
Yeah, and a fine role model for not just any old person that watches this film, but certainly a role model for young girls. I remember watching this as a youngster back in the day and just thinking, if somebody like her can do all of these amazing and fearless things, then surely I can too. Turns out I can't. I'm absolutely scared shitless and things like that. But she's strong, not just in brawn, but she's strong in the mind too. She ultimately outwits the alien queen at the end.
Yeah.
Which is the ultimate weapon to have. But yeah, I mean, if nobody has ever watched this film, you know, I dare them to not feel something when they watch this. And for those that have watched this, may we watch it for many years to come.
Well, of course, it's not my favourite.
No, really?
But I entirely agree with everything you said. It is a magnificent movie. Ellen Ripley is one of the greatest cinema icons in the history of the medium.
She's iconic.
She is.
She's a magnet.
Hence me just calling her an icon.
Yes.
Yeah. Well done.
I want to go and watch it at the cinema with you guys. I think they might do it again. There's been an
40
anniversary.
Years. Yeah, 40 years.
I really would. It's one of those films I just would love to see on the big screen.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's beautiful on the big screen.
So what have you got, Ben?
Yeah,
because
Ben,
I'm intrigued.
Tell us.
Well, of course, I've got Blade Runner.
Yeah?
What can I say that I haven't said a million times before? It's got the greatest visuals in movie history. It has one of the all-time great heroes in Rick Deckard. It has one of the all-time great femme fatales / damsels in distress in Rachel. It has one of the all-time great sympathetic villains in Roy Batty. It has one of the greatest, deepest, most symbolic scripts with some of the most unforgettable lines. It is, in short, perfection and the greatest film ever made. Boom.
I won because... The listeners out there hear it most weeks, me with The Thing or Gemma with The Shining. Keep going, man.
Yeah,
why? I want you to just take the mic and spat.
Say what's in your heart.
I'm not going to. You can go back to five. You can listen to 5 years worth and skip to the end podcast for that. A couple of other points that I want to make briefly, though, is Ridley Scott has tinkered with the film on several occasions, releasing various different versions over the years. But he hit the jackpot in 2007 with the final cut, which is the perfect form of the movie. If you have yet to see this and you want to go and seek it out, get hold of the final cut. That is the best version. Plus, 35 years later, we get a glorious sequel in Blade Runner 2049, which is as perfect a sequel as you could possibly get and is damn close to being as good as the original. Mm-hmm. And the more I think about that film, the more I see 2049, the more I think about it, the closer and closer it gets to the original. It will never quite reach the original, certainly won't surpass it, but it's so fucking good. So better, so much better than it had any right to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And of course, all of us have been to Secret Cinema for Blade Runner.
Yeah, great day out, that was. Yeah.
So good.
Just completely elevates the whole experience of being in that dystopian future. It's just, it was wonderful, really remarkable in the evening.
What I like about both the films we've talked about is all the making ofs, the documentaries. Yeah. Still today you get, when it's their anniversaries, behind the scene photos you've never seen. Mm-hmm. Other directors doing commentary about how it influenced them. They're the blueprint for most films we see now. They are absolutely awesome from the same guy.
This is true. Think of a deep space alien-based movie in the last 30 years that hasn't been cribbed from Alien. Think of a dystopian future movie in the last 30 years that hasn't been cribbed from Blade Runner. You know, you're not. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a very short list because all of those films have cribbed from Alien and Blade Runner. They are, as Mark says, the blueprint.
I can't think of any.
No.
Mac and Me at times.
There it is.
Mac and Me was very Alien.
Yeah. In McDonald's, no one can hear you scream. Yeah, that would be awesome.
In the cinema, no one can hear you scream because you're the only one in there watching it.
This will be interesting to go to social media because when I was looking at some of the response, all I saw was literally Alien or literally Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. But I know there are other films he has made, so I'd be very intrigued to see what has come through.
Oh, we've had loads. Part-time Ninja on Twitter, at Beximus, agrees with me, says, has to be Blade Runner. His vision and creativity in this film is second to none. A perfect film. Of course, I agree. Also on Twitter, Kev, at Surreal Kevbo. The guy's a legend, and I love Black Hawk Down.
Oh, that's goodness. A good film.
I haven't seen that film in a long time. That was when Josh Hartnett was a movie star.
When he was a thing.
Yeah. Travis Dean at Chefzilla72 said The Duelists, which I've never seen. It was Scott's first film.
Oh. Mm.
On Instagram, James Bottrill, a.k.a. Uncle Bizzle123, has said The Vistas, The Score, The Camaraderie. For me, it's Thelma and Louise.
I forget he did that.
Yeah.
I studied that at uni. It's a really good film.
Yeah. That's got Brad Pitt in it, hasn't
it? It's got Brad Pitt in it.
And it's a dickhead.
He's a massive bellend. Mm-hmm. But it's not just about two chicks hanging out. It's actually a really great story.
Mm-hmm. I love the Wayne's World spin-off of that scene.
On Twitter, JMac at Nightbreed 1984 says, Black Rain. The 80s neon-soaked Japanese streets look so good. And the bromance between Nick and Massa always gets me right in the feels.
I've not seen it.
No.
I haven't seen it. And I looked this up and it looks really fucking cool. You had me at 80s neon-soaked Japanese streets.
Yeah, fucking hell.
Sign us up.
Yep. Hal at The Bozdog has said, unpopular choice, but my favourite film of his is Kingdom of Heaven. Oy. He says, I love the cinematography, the conflict of faith, and the cast.
Is this the one with Orlando Bloom?
Yeah.
That's not a bad film. I've seen it once at uni. It was actually all right.
I've never seen it.
I don't know. I genuinely thought it was okay.
To be fair, I can't comment. I haven't seen it. I avoided it like the plague based on the reviews and just Orlando Bloom being in
it. Dude, Orlando Bloom, Elizabethtown, you know.
Is that supposed to win me over? I don't know what you were expecting there.
You know.
It was really gunning Jesus. For Come some on, kind man. Of reaction.
Come on.
You could have said that one episode of Extras. That would have been me.
Yes.
Willy Wonka, Johnny Wanker.
Oh, God, I love Extras.
On Facebook, Robin Seddon has said, Gladiator for me is a perfect story, brilliantly told.
I've not seen that in such a long time, but yeah.
It's a fucking genuine masterpiece.
It's wonderful.
It is. I'm bringing it as a rewatch soon, but I need to pick my moment because it's fucking long.
Oh man, that film made me cry hard.
Mm-hmm. Plus Joaquin Phoenix is in it.
Yes.
He is.
Yes, he wasn't very big then.
That's true. It was the first thing that really got him noticed, I would say.
There you go. Yeah.
On Twitter, Word Salad Radio, at Word Salad Radio, has said The Martian.
Oh, yes.
Great film.
Yeah, it was on telly last night.
Was it?
On Film 4, I forget how funny it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But nothing has gripped me more than watching potatoes grow. I've always wanted those Jersey Royals just to come through. It's like, come on!
Matt Damon in that. Absolutely awesome.
Because he's on screen for like 90% of the runtime on his own.
So good. Yeah. And what do you think, Ben, about him returning?
Here it bloody
Jay and Silent Bob reboot.
I have no opinion. Life's a Pitch podcast at Life's a Pitch Show has said, we have a soft spot in our hearts for Exodus, Gods and Kings, an homage to classical biblical epics with some great performances from Bale and Edgerton. So that's the one where they got a load of white people to pretend to be Egyptians.
I'm not interested in this film. Sorry.
No, thank you on that one. And then finally on Instagram, Rob Shepherd agrees with you two. It has to be Alien. It influenced genres and inspired generations. And Ripley's tighty whities were as much of an awakening as Princess Leia's gold bikini.
Fuck yeah.
Nice.
Degrading to women.
And we at Skip the End.
We hate that.
We hate it. Yeah, so sorry, Rob. Yeah. If Rob, you're coming to Skip Fest, you're not welcome.
Don't come.
It's too degrading.
Sorry, Rob, I support you.
Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis?
Yeah.
Always.
Big the time. Winner,
yeah.
by one vote,
what?
Was Alien.
Oh yeah! My God,
I knew it was a better film.
Yes, that proves it. That proves it.
That's it.
This is the real quiz.
The real quiz. Yeah.
But of course, Blade Runner was second choice, with Gladiator not too far behind. A good spread of his films were nominated. 15 of them got votes.
Wow, I didn't even know he made 15 films.
He's made far more than that. A lot of love for Thelma and Louise.
Brilliant stuff.
Hell of a lot of votes. Didn't get a single vote for Blade Runner 2049.
No.
Which really isn't surprising, I suppose, because not many people are going to prefer it to the original, are they? So they're not going to vote for that over Blade Runner. So I can understand it not getting any votes, even though it is, in and of itself, a phenomenal movie.
But he didn't direct it.
That's true, actually, yeah.
So they wouldn't
vote. I should have mentioned that. I should have told all the people on Twitter, you can't have that one.
Yeah.
Except none of them voted for it, so wouldn't have to.
Shouldn't have to. We'll save that for when we're masturbating over him.
Yeah. We've already done him, haven't we?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't that long ago.
Bloody hell.
Never mind. Yeah. But we've got plenty of other names in the pot.
Mm-hmm.
Who's picking this time?
Oh, I don't know.
John Rob.
Go on, Gemma.
Please, please, please. Okay.
Just to let you know, it's been Spielberg
it
and
has.
Now this. You need to pull out someone big.
Well,
again, she's picking at random, so it's not really her fault.
Because that's my aim. Well, try this one for size, Mark. On the next episode, we're going to be masturbating over Brian De Palma.
Ooh.
Ooh, la la indeed.
I was the third brother of five, doing whatever I had to do to survive. I'm not saying what I did was all right. Trying to break out of the ghetto was a day-to-day fight.
Our rewatch this time round is Jackie Brown. Jackie Brown is Quentin Tarantino's third film, and his first and so far only film to be based on a previous work, Elmore Leonard's novel Rum Punch. Jackie, played by 70s blaxploitation icon Pam Grier, is an air hostess and a small-time money runner for Ordell Roby, an arms dealer played by Samuel L. Jackson. With the help of a friendly bail bondsman played by Robert Forster, Jackie attempts to scam Ordell whilst avoiding the police closing in on Ordell's operation. The film also features Robert De Niro as Ordell's ex-con partner and Michael Keaton as a federal agent on their trail. Now, Gemma, I'm going to throw this one out to you first. So, Gemma, Jackie Brown or Khaki Brown?
Let's always do this with every film we do. So it's the least violent film in Tarantino's collection, and I can see why it would often be pushed behind the likes of Pulp Fiction or Inglourious Basterds, because I am guilty of this. This isn't a Tarantino film that I would automatically want to watch, but it has reminded me of how well Tarantino writes characters and how well he actually develops a story rather than relying on a good old ear slicing. It's a long old film, but nevertheless, it's a film that people shouldn't pass on, and it's really great to actually get refreshed on this film. So I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Gemma. Mark, Jackie Brown or Jackie Brownstein in your pants?
Can we keep going back and
two? Yeah,
see how many brown puns he can come up with.
Let's do it.
I'll be honest, when you announced this, dude, and this is being completely honest, I'd only seen the film once, and I never rated it up there as a classic, which most Tarantino films achieve every time.
Mm-hmm.
Watching this again, it was a film I think that I appreciated a lot more, and it is definitely a film that's going to grow on more and more repeat viewings.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed it a lot more than I remember, but it's still, for me, not the classic that Tarantino achieves again and again and again. Minus that shit one with his dad. But, but apart from that.
Yeah, apart from that.
Fair enough. As I've said at the start of the show, I think it's Tarantino's most underrated film. It's cool, it's funny, it's smart, it's twisty. You never quite know who's scamming who, and it's a hell of a lot of fun. I love it. So let's start at the start. Let's start with the opening credits sequence, which I think is absolutely amazing. So we have Jackie, Pam Grier, on that moving walkway in the airport as we hear the strains of Across 110th Street playing. How cool is that, Jana?
Oh, that song by Bobby Womack is a song that I remember listening to the first time around uni when this film came out. And I think I had it on repeat probably about 10 or 12 times. It's a song that I can lip sync the house down to. I'm just saying, not bragging. But when you think about it, the way how that opening credit starts, she's just standing still on an elevator and she's just sort of passing by. But then gradually she starts getting faster and faster and faster, which is symbolism of what the story is all about. Thank you.
I miss all this. I just see it and think.
Because she's slowly walking and then by the end of it, she's running to the entrance where she's greeting people. So it's kind of like, well, is it, you know, that obviously the whole story snowballs into this money heist. So could it be connected to that? Is it like symbolism?
I don't care. I sit there and think, shame. How cool does this look? Yeah. And instantly I'm in for a Tarantino film. You could tell me, literally, don't tell me who directed it. And I'll know from that opening sound, the shot, the way it's shot, and the camera just pans slowly. It's slightly gritty. Doesn't look like $1 million.
Even the text, the way how the font is on the credits, it's that blaxploitation kind
brilliant.
Of feel like Shaft and Coffee. It really does. Foxy Brown, which of course Pam Grier starred in. It's very that.
That's the moment you're like, this is going to be great.
Yeah, this is a Tarantino film. Interestingly, after that credit sequence, we don't actually see Jackie again until the 27th minute of the film.
Bloody hell, is that long?
It is that long because the opening of the film really is absolutely dominated by Samuel L. Jackson as Ordell Roby. I too don't watch this film very often, so I'd forgotten how incredible Samuel L. Jackson is in this film. He's amazing and hilarious as the fast-talking hustler Ordell Roby. And as I say, he dominates it. It's his picture for the first half an hour.
He's so charismatic. Mm-hmm. And he's supposed to be this guy that is the villain. You know, we shouldn't be liking this guy, but sitting down with Robert De Niro and Bridget Fonda watching a film about chicks with guns and spouting off all this useless knowledge about an AK-47, you can't help but like the guy. But it isn't until later on in the film when we see him address Chris Tucker, a guy who's unfortunately blabbed his mouth to the feds, you realise just how nasty of a motherfucker Odell really is.
I don't think he gets enough credit because he's had a run of doing quite a lot straight to DVD. He has. We saw him again in Glass recently, reminded why he's such a great character from Unbreakable. But he's one of the best actors of our generation.
Hell yeah.
But we never remember. You remember the De Niro's. You remember all these great actors like Leonardo DiCaprio now. We forget about him. And watching these films in the 90s and the 2000s where we see him working with Tarantino again and again, he steals the show.
Yeah.
And he's up there with De Niro.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's not like he's just on the screen on his own. De Niro is probably the best actor of all time. Many would argue. Many wouldn't.
Yeah.
He's fucking on scene with him, and I think he's probably better than De Niro.
I couldn't agree more.
Far and away in this film.
Yeah.
And I think the issue with Samuel L. Jackson is that people take him for granted.
Yeah.
They just know he's great, so they expect him to be great. So they don't talk about enough that he's been great in this film, great in that film, because it's just kind of expected. He's set such a high bar for himself. We're like, yeah, another great performance from Samuel L. That's what he does.
Yeah.
And we don't appreciate him enough for
it. It's true.
Mm-hmm. We should do, because he really does hold his own, especially somebody who's established for generations and generations. But I would argue and say this is a film dominated by two people, Samuel L. Jackson, for me, Pam fucking Grier.
Incredible.
She is the beating heart of what makes Jackie Brown so wonderful, because she's cool, she's fearless, she does it all for what she wants it to be. It's all down to her, and I love how she's motivated by greed, she's motivated by the fact that she's looking out for herself, and she has the most powerful weapon out of everybody in the whole film, which is her brain. She is a smart bitch.
Beautifully said.
I'm here for it.
I love how at first you think she might be kind of a powerless person. She's one of Ordell Roby's lackeys. She's a money runner. She has no agency or power of her own. But within seconds of being arrested, her brain's ticking. She's like, I can fix this.
Yeah.
I can make sure I don't go to prison. I can make sure I earn a hell of a lot of money as well. It takes no time between her being picked up and her having a plan and executing the plan. She's brilliant.
She's always one step ahead of everybody. She is the most powerful person in this whole film. I just love her.
Excuse my ignorance, but have we seen her do much since?
Yes. She's been in The L Word, which was a TV show about 8-9 years ago. She was great in that.
I haven't seen a name about.
Really?
Not recently.
Yeah, I can't think of anything I've seen.
I think The L Word is probably
the
last big thing she did.
She's the lead in this film, which came out after Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs. And that's a big part to play.
Yeah, and the casting of her and Robert Forster as the bail bondsman Max Cherry, that was another classic bit of Tarantino casting where he was plucking veteran actors out of obscurity and giving them a new lease on life. And it was great for Pam Grier in this film, but especially great for Robert Forster because he was nominated for an Oscar.
Mm-hmm. Best Supporting Actor. I didn't realise he got that.
Yeah, he did. And he's absolutely brilliant in this film as well because Max Cherry, he's a tough guy. He's a bail bondsman. He chases criminals around the country and brings them back in for his reward. But he never just seems like a stereotypical one-dimensional tough guy. There's a hell of a lot of heart to him underneath that, a lot of vulnerability.
And that comes out when he meets Jackie Brown for the first time, when she's walking up from the pathway of the cells. And the Delphonics' "Didn't I Blow Your Mind This Time" just plays in the background. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like the unofficial love song between them two. And he just falls for her hard.
Yeah.
He's a cool motherfucker. He's again, cool. I'm going to sound like a broken record player, but we don't see him enough. What the hell's he doing now?
Well, he was in Heroes. He played Peter Petrelli's dad in Heroes.
How long ago was
that? He played Charlie Bailey Gates' police chief in Me, Myself and Irene.
Oh my God!
That's where he's from, yeah.
He pops up in things every now and again, Robert Forster. He was in the final season of Breaking Bad as well.
Yeah.
He pops up here, there and everywhere,
Cool.
But he is a very, very cool actor. Not long after that scene where he picks up Jackie from the prison is one of my favourite scenes in the film. It's when the two of them go to that dive bar and Jackie has specifically asked for a dark bar. So they go to that bar that is dark and it's just awash in this red lighting, this gorgeous, dark red lighting. And it's beautiful, so striking and atmospheric. And you've got to give all the props in the world to not only Tarantino, but to the cinematographer Guillermo Navarro, because that scene looks incredible, doesn't
it? It's gorgeous. It's really, really
gorgeous.
I'm
so glad he said, because I've got it wrote down. I'm like, how am I going to pronounce
that? Oh, bless
you. And then I've got to say that it just looks slick.
Yeah.
It looks incredible. Every shot on that, you just want to print out. I say it again and again, but that's when you know it's him. It's beautiful.
You talk about darkness in some of the scenes. Now, one of the scenes that I really liked was when Odell comes to Jackie's place and they're almost doing like a tete-a-tete. So in the scene, you'll get Odell turning the lamp down so they're in complete and utter darkness. So it's almost like he has the power card for that moment. Mm-hmm. But then Jackie comes along and slowly turns the lamp back up, which brings up the light, which makes the whole scene visible again. So it's kind of a head versus head, like Jackie versus Odell, as to who's got the power at that moment, because Odell is intending on murdering her.
And when she brings up the light, she's got a gun in her hand.
Yes.
So the power is entirely with her.
I love that scene so much.
Oh, so good. Mm-hmm. An actor we haven't mentioned at this moment, and this is one of the scenes where I was like, oh my God, how hard-faced and how brilliant you are. Michael Keaton.
Yes, yes.
He deserves more credit. I know we've seen him recently in Birdman, and he's come back, hasn't he? He went away for a long time.
Yeah.
I'll always remember him as being one of the best Batman of all time. But I think he's just a great actor.
And Beetlejuice, of course.
Of course.
The best. I mean, hopefully we will get the sequel that people keep talking about, but there's no announcement. But in this, every scene I see him in, I just think he's an underrated actor. I know that sounds crazy, but he is.
He
again,
is.
Look at the cast, and he shines.
He's effortlessly cool. He's just always really cool, just really chilled. He's just so comfortable in his own skin. Even though he's kind of twitchy and quirky, he's just cool as fuck. He doesn't care. He's brilliant, man, Michael Keaton.
Yeah.
And he picked up this role again. You know the film Out of Sight?
Yes! Oh, so good!
With was it George
Clooney?
Jennifer Lopez. So that was based on a book also written by Elmore Leonard, which featured the same cop character, Ray Nicolette. So Michael Keaton played Nicolette in that film as well, in a brief cameo.
I did not know that.
Yes. I didn't know that. Mm. Talking about characters that you love, I absolutely love Melanie, played by Bridget Fonda.
Yes.
Only a bit character, but she's great because her only motivation in life is just watching TV and getting high. And she's already like done it. She's achieved her goals. She's just cruising on the plains right now. But she's got this glisten in her eye that just makes it impossible not to warm to her, to sort of feel something towards her. And the one scene I love is when she's trying to clearly seduce Lewis.
Yeah.
You know, they're talking about a photograph of her in Japan. It's the only photograph that is of her in Japan. And there's a guy cut out of the shot. They're just casually chatting. And then all of a sudden she just turns to him and says, "Wanna fuck?" And it breaks the ice. It shatters. Mm-hmm. It's like an avalanche.
3 minutes later.
Good lads. Come on, Lois.
I love when he says it to her as well, and he's not remotely shocked. He just looks at her like,
go on then.
Right, why not?
But then as soon as that happens, their relationship together just goes completely south. It just sours madly, which, of course, is the culmination of the shocking scene of what happens on the money heist day in the car park.
We'll come to that in a minute. Before we get to the end of Melanie, their relationship then, as you say, it takes a turn and heads downhill. And there's a scene between Lewis Robert De Niro's character and Ordell Roby, when they're in a bar and Melanie has tried to get Lewis on her side to say, let's scam the money from Ordell. And Lewis, being Ordell's old friend, says this to her. And he's like, how can you have this woman? How can you let this woman know her plans? How can you trust her? And Roby says, I don't trust Melanie, but I trust Melanie to be Melanie. And I love that. He knows her. He knows she's going to try and fuck him over. That's why he can keep her around, because he knows exactly what she's going to do. And I love that. I think that's a great Tarantino line.
Yeah.
I think it's probably one of his arguably best written scripts. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely flawless. My problem was that it's 2.5 hours long, I think, 2 hours 45. Yeah. For me, you know my attention span, but it's very drawn out. Every scene's probably 10 minutes too long, in my opinion. It's very slow pace. It's a big slow burner. And at times, like an hour in, I'm looking, thinking, shit, there's still an hour and 40 minutes to go here. I understand you appreciate it. It's so well done, but I was like, this is long.
Yeah, I mean, it is long, but I always subscribe to the Roger Ebert thing of a good film is never too long and a bad film is never short enough. So even though it is long, 2.5 hours is a long time to be sat in one place. I love the film so much that it doesn't drag for me.
Yeah.
But I can appreciate if you're not loving it as much as I am, it may feel like a bit of a slog. But let's go back to Robert De Niro then. It's really interesting to me that Robert De Niro took this role because it's very much a supporting role.
Yeah.
And the character of Lewis is so taciturn, he barely says a word. Really, throughout the film, all the acting is in the physicality. He's portraying a guy who's fresh out of prison and not quite knowing what to do with himself. And I'm quite surprised in a way that De Niro took such a small, barely vocal role. And it makes me think, is it a testament to actors just really wanting to work with Tarantino that they're willing to do these roles? That if it was another director, they'd go, fuck off, that's not a big enough role for me. I'm Robert fucking De Niro, you're kidding.
Yeah.
But because it's Tarantino, do you think they're willing to say, yeah, I'm in?
It's like you think Rocky and Bullwinkle work with Tarantino.
Every time.
But if you hadn't have done Rocky and Bullwinkle or an advert recently for some bread, there's an advert on telly that's doing bread, I'm thinking, yeah. I don't think he's done it for the money. The way he looks so lost and confused of someone that's witnessed stuff that he doesn't want to talk about, probably behind bars. It's not pale cast today, but he looks very withdrawn. He looks white, doesn't he?
He does.
And you can't stage that all the time just for this episode for us to talk about how pale, top three pale actors in the next podcast.
You're obsessed.
But he looks really drawn. He's
just come out of prison and he looks like
but
he
looks like it. Yeah. And how do you look like someone that's come out of prison? Yeah. I don't get it.
I'm sure he used to be a method actor, so maybe he just went to prison for a year.
Prison Mac. But I don't know how. You look like you come out of prison, but he does. And that shows how much of a great actor he is.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably his CV. He can now say, I worked with Tarantino.
Exactly, exactly. And to bring it back around to what Gemma was saying about that big scene where Melanie dies in the parking lot, I think that's what makes it all worth it. Even though he has very little to do throughout the film, he then has that scene, doesn't he, with Melanie.
Yeah, he might have just saved it all for Dirty Grandpa.
Maybe so. Maybe he was thinking about that. He was playing the long game, thinking of the future.
It'll pay off eventually, Rob. I'll get just there. Keep going. Yeah, that was shocking.
Because Melanie's just getting at him because he can't find where he's parked the van. And she's like, is it here? Is it in this bit? Is it in that bit? Is it in that bit? And she just is badgering. And then what does he do?
Shoots her in the face and the stomach.
Boom, boom. It's absolutely brutal. And then he doesn't flinch. He's so calm. He does it and then he just goes, oh, there's the car. I told you it was here.
But isn't that classic Tarantino dark humour?
Yes, absolutely.
It's almost like you're so shocked that he just turned around and murdered her. But at the same time, you can't help but go... Yeah, that's right, he did find the car. Yeah. Oh my God, he's a psychopath.
But also, Tarantino was trying to go against his own mould a little bit, because at this point, after his first two films, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction, he had a reputation for violence and blood. But this film is surprisingly bloodless. It's as if he was saying to his critics, fuck you, that's not all I can do. So there are four big deaths in this film, four shooting deaths. At no point do you see the bullets impact any of those four people.
Nope.
It's always slightly off camera, or they're obscured by a car seat or something like that.
Or darkness.
And of the four, you only see blood splattered twice.
Yeah.
It's compared to other Tarantino movies. You know when you usually see that blood pissing out of people?
Yeah, like over the top.
In Django and Hateful Eight and that kind of stuff. None of that in this film. I think he purposely wanted to say, I can make things other than blood and gore.
And that's maybe why I feel it feels that long, because you don't get that action after 15-20 minutes.
Yeah.
You're not getting that payoff. So
because it doesn't feel like a typically Tarantino film.
No, it doesn't.
But then again, don't you think that he might lull you into this kind of sense of security, getting to know these characters individually, only for them to... say, for example, shoot a woman in the car park or shoot somebody in a van or double cross them, thinking that, I'm going to give you all of this information. Swerve alert, I'm actually going to steal this bag and take the money and give it to this guy over here.
It is more powerful when there are fewer big killing moments. That moment when Melanie is shot in the car park is a surprise.
Yeah.
Massively.
Because we've not had any big deaths for, what, an hour or something prior to that?
Yeah.
So it is all the more shocking. I think it does work and make it all the more powerful. There's a couple of other scenes that I wanted to talk about before we move on is... Just before that, before Melanie is shot, I love when Pam Grier, when Jackie is in the dressing room about to do the swap, and she's walked into the mall, and she's all full of confidence, she's brash, she's come up with a plan, she knows what she's doing. She gets into that dressing room, she puts the bag down, sits on the bench and looks in the mirror, and locks eyes with herself, and then just for a moment, doubt and fear come over her face when she realises the severity of what she's about to try and pull off. And then just as she's kind of thinking things through, Melanie turns up and then she has to shake herself
Amazing.
Out of it. It's such a small, tiny scene. It's a few seconds, but it's incredibly directed and magnificently acted by Pam Grier.
Mm-hmm. Isn't the song Street Life by Randy Crawford? So that song is like real big and pomp and it's showy, it's brassy. But yeah, those few seconds can...
Was she not nominated for an Oscar?
No,
she was not.
She was nominated for a Golden Globe, didn't win, but was nominated, and she was absolutely robbed. Neither her or Samuel L. Jackson were nominated for this, and both absolutely clearly should have been.
Was Tarantino?
I don't think. No,
the only
Oscar nomination it got was Robert Forster for Max Cherry. But then, following on from that scene in the dressing room after the swap of the money and the mag of what's it books, that swap has been made, Jackie then comes out of the dressing room in a panic. You see her, she's looking around, she's walking really fast, and you think, oh God, she's lost it. Mm-hmm. She's lost it. She was cool, calm, and collected before, but she doesn't know what she's doing now. She's marching through the mall, and then all of a sudden she starts spinning around and she's shouting for Ray, like, Ray, where are you? And you think it's all crumbling down. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out that was all part of the plan.
Yes!
That was all an act.
The best section of the entire film, The Money Heist.
It's so good, isn't it?
It's so clever. I love films where they really do... tell the same story but from different perspectives, and it completely changes what you originally think is happening, and this is probably one of the finest examples of that.
And the direction on that scene is incredible. When Jackie's coming out of the dressing room and down through the mall, it's two very long tracking shots. There's a massive one through the store that she's in, and the camera's zooming around her as she's starting to panic, and then when she gets to the escalator, it switches to a different camera angle as she comes down it and then through the mall where she's panicked and looking for Ray. Two gorgeous tracking shots, just classic Tarantino.
I'm literally sitting here, salivating, like literally dribbling, thinking it's only like a month until we see a brand new film from him.
Yeah.
You're talking about what makes Tarantino Tarantino, and we're getting a new one.
Yup.
Oh my Once upon a time in Hollywood better be the film we want, because I was this excited for Hateful Eight, going, Dad's back, you got all this great cast, and I was like, this is a play for 4 weeks.
Well, I mean, if Cannes is anything to go by,
I know,
I think we're going
to
be
they
okay.
always stand and clap for everything there just to fucking do it. But I'm getting hopeful.
Yes, me
and
too.
And I'm excited.
Yeah. Me too.
Please be good.
Have either of you ever heard of or seen a film called Life of Crime?
No.
It was effectively a prequel to Jackie Brown, so Tarantino had nothing to do with it, but it was based on another Elmore Leonard novel called The Switch, which features many of the same characters. It stars Jennifer Aniston, but it also features Mos Def playing Ordell Roby, Samuel L. Jackson's role, and John Hawkes playing the Robert De Niro role.
Okay.
And I've never seen it either, and I was hoping one of you might have, but from what I've read, it's actually a very good film, so I'm intrigued to see how Mos Def and John Hawkes do, effectively playing younger versions of, of De Niro and
I really
and
like
Jackson.
Most Def in acting roles.
Yeah, he's a very good actor.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, he did a film with Bruce Willis called 16 Blocks that is very, very good.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah,
he also did Be Kind Rewind with Jack Black.
Yes, I like that film.
Yeah. It's all right.
And Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy,
yes.
which I quite like.
I've never seen that.
Yeah. You know, I like
no.
it.
Yeah. Gets a lot of... I think everyone loves the book.
But it's got Tim.
Yes.
Timbo.
But everyone loves the
Archbishop
book.
Archbishop of Canterbury.
Well, I've really enjoyed talking about that, guys, and I think we've kind of hit up all the major points. So shall we score it?
Let's.
I want to go to Mark first, because he seemed to like it the least, so I'm intrigued.
It's annoying, because I came here, and in my head, I was like, it's probably a 6. What? And then Because it's my least favourite, and it felt like a slog, but then I watched it again, and it's like a 7. And then after talking to you guys today, I'm like, oh, shit, I really enjoyed what we talked. This is what happens, doesn't it? It can sway you.
Definitely.
I'm going to stick with a 7.
Okay.
Because going to an 8 then puts it into the territory of like Pulp Fiction and everything else. So it's not as good as them, but it's 7. And that's good considering I came here with like a 6.
Okay.
Just.
Fair enough. Gemma, what are you giving it?
Oh, it's going to be an 8 out of 10 for me. Mm-hmm. I wish that I didn't dismiss this, because that I'm guilty of this. And I really hope that after us talking about it, people aren't going to do the same thing. They're going to rewatch it and they're going to enjoy it just as much as we have. So an 8 out of 10.
Well, that makes the maths beautiful for me, because I'm giving it a 9, because I think it's a fantastic, underrated, tremendous film, which gives Jackie Brown an overall, skip to the end, 8 out of 10.
That's beautiful.
Well, hey. So, we've talked about Jackie Brown, but we need to have another rewatch. So whose turn is it next?
Oh, I don't know.
It's my choice. Oh. I love how we act surprised. I know, every time. It's not the routine. So for our next rewatch, we don't need eyes to see it. It's going to be Event Horizon.
Oh, yeah!
I teased it at the start, and now the time is here. It's going to be a brand new game show.
Ooh.
You guys have done well. We've got through an hour and a half of the episode, and you haven't been badgering me, wanting to find out the name or the concept.
Oh, no, yeah. To be honest, I think
you know what you like. It's going to be.
I think we forgot.
Be good.
Yeah.
I'll start by saying it's going to be a freer. Now, for the guys that listened to the episode recently, it's not a wanna. So, Ben, what's a threer?
A threer means we're going to run the game over three episodes.
It's good, isn't it? It's a skip talk. So, basically, I'm going to tell you the concept of the game. Ben, quite often you'll hear on the podcast when I'm doing my real big research into our rewatches or our new releases.
Sorry,
I will quite oftenly use some sites like IMDb to get the plot summary.
Always.
Yeah. And I'll read it out as if I've wrote it, you know, previously.
Written it.
Always.
Written it, that's what I meant. And then, you know, I'll read it out quite well, and then Ben will say, well done, you took that off IMDb.
I mean, that's debatable.
So why don't we just make a game show of it? So what I'm going to do, I've got basically 10 copy and pasted off IMDb plot summaries.
Okay.
Oh.
I'm going to start reading the plot summary. And you need to just basically guess the film that I'm describing.
Right.
That's okay. So simple.
So do we have to shout our name out first?
But what we're going to do is normally with editing and all this, I'm like, can we not do that? We're not going to worry. Today you can just shout it out halfway while I'm talking.
Ooh. What?
The editing's going to sound a bit tossed, mm-hmm. but it doesn't matter because it's going to be fun.
Okay.
So I'll start reading it off and at any point you can go, Gemma.
You don't have to say your name.
We do have to say our name.
Yeah, your name.
Just well, Gemma. I just asked you if you did, and you said we don't have to this time.
No, you don't have to wait like until I finish the whole thing.
I didn't ask if we had to wait. I said, do we have to shout our name?
Not me.
It's a disaster already, Gem.
You're listening to Skip to the End.
Well, this game show is 1 minute 37, and Ben's called it, what did you call it?
Disaster.
Oh, not shit show. So there's going to be 10 read out, and you'll get 1 point. But Ben, if you do shout out Ben, which is a good start, and not, you know, Mark, and then you guess the wrong film, you'll be frozen out just for that part.
Oh,
so I'm not
going to
freeze you out for the game, you know, for the next round.
Okay.
Or anything tight like that.
Yeah.
All you're going to have to do is give me the title of the film. No actors, no year. It's really simple. It's going to be 1 point for one correct answer. So the maximum you're going to score is 10 today, which seems fair to me.
Is there a tie break?
There has to be, doesn't there? There has to be. It's hard to come up with a name for this one, but I think I've nailed it.
Here we go.
Are you ready? It's going to be called Lost the Plot.
Oh, hold on. No, we've done Lost the Plot.
Oh, my God.
You know when you struggle.
Oh, no.
Okay, so we're going to call it Lost the Plot Again.
You lazy bastard.
Do you like that? Or still lost the plot. Or lose the plot. No, we'll go with lost the plot again.
Fucking
is that right?
Fine.
It has to be.
Pull my weight around
it. It has to be.
I've decided to pull my socks up and try harder.
I mean, there's one way of saying what it was.
Are you ready? This also means I need to read.
Oh, yeah. That's really fun. Christ.
So the first one, are you both ready?
Ready.
Again, you're going to shout your name out.
Yeah.
And at that point,
are you sure?
And at that point, I will say, yes, and then you'll answer. I want there to be a space
for me
to say yes. If you say your answer before I say yes, you're disqualified. We're not throwing that in.
For the whole game.
Are you ready for the first one, both of you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
8 years after the Joker's reign, Batman, with the help of Catwoman.
Gemma.
Ben.
Oh, just Gemma.
Just got me, yeah.
The Dark Knight Rises.
Correct.
Yes.
Very simple, mm-hmm. 1 point.
And you did say yes. Yes.
There we go.
Yeah.
Good work.
Can you keep saying that whenever we put our names
Are
up?
You ready?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Eyes down.
Eyes down for a full ounce.
Yeah.
Vito bingo.
No, can't say that. There's two in this one for three in a bed. What's it off? Bullseye,
bullseye,
something like that.
Yeah.
Brilliant. You're playing for your BFH. Bus fare home.
Yeah.
Right, are you ready?
Yeah.
A Japanese martial arts instructor agrees to teach karate
Ben.
To... Yes.
The Karate Kid.
Correct. Both of you look worried, like I'm trying to screw you over.
Which you will in the later one, I guarantee it.
Yeah. So it's one all. Happy?
Yeah.
I guess.
Really simple.
Mm-hmm.
Number three. Two men reaching middle age with not much to show but disappointment embark on a week-long road trip.
Ben.
Yes.
Oh, God. This could be anything. I'm going to go with The Bucket List.
Incorrect.
Ah!
Oh.
Are you ready for me to continue?
Ready.
Through California's wine country.
Gemma.
Yes.
Sideways.
Correct.
Yeah. Poop.
Good work, though.
Yeah, good work,
and
Gem.
You let me say yes. I'm not going to screw you over. I thought it's not fair.
No, I don't believe it.
I don't believe it at all, Gemma.
As it stands, it's 2-1 to Gemma.
Okay.
Number four. After a bitter divorce, an actor disguises himself as a female...
Ben.
Yes.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
Correct!
Yes!
To all.
You made that sound like a really horrific drama.
Have you ever
like
seen...
Like someone starring Glenn Close.
Like a bitter...
Have ever you seen the trailer they made? Of,
yes.
Like a horror version.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, legitimately scared me.
We're nearly halfway there and it's 2-2.
Okay. Woohoo.
Are you ready?
Yep.
Mm. Number five. An 8-year-old troublemaker must protect his
Gemma.
House.
Home Alone.
Oh, easily, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well done, Gem.
We're halfway there and it's 3-2.
Okay, here comes the kick.
No. There's not. I'm not doing
Gemma,
it.
Gemma, I guarantee one of them, he'll read it as if it sounds like E.T., but it'll be Mac and Me. Or he'll read it like it's Mac and Me, but it's E.T.
Yeah.
It's one way or the other, isn't it?
He drives me mad sometimes. Number six. An alien trying to escape from NASA.
Ben.
Yes.
Oh, God. Which one's it going to be? E.T.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Incorrect.
Gemma! Gemma!
Do you want to read it all?
No, Gemma!
Yep.
Mac and Me!
Yes!
Mark, you've outdone yourself this time.
It was an alien trying to escape from NASA is befriended by a wheelchair-bound boy.
Oh, man, it was 50-50.
I can't go.
And I got it wrong.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Number seven.
Sorry.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
A family vacation to a small town discovers the entire town is inhabited by goblins in disguise.
Ben?
Yep.
Troll 2?
Yes!
Oh!
Yes! Can you remember where they visited?
Nilbog.
Yes. And how do you remember this?
Because it's goblin backwards.
It's 4-3. This is going well. No fucking over you so far?
Yes, yeah.
Thank you.
Ish.
This is getting tough now. Number eight. The Russian government hires the veterans of a police academy.
Ben.
Oh.
Yes.
Police Academy 7 Mission to Moscow.
Correct! Yes! So good. If he had said Police Academy 7, he wouldn't have got it right.
No, that's only fair.
Two more to go.
Oh,
what's the score?
4-4.
Oh.
I swear, if there's something about, you know, a San Francisco building.
No. Number nine. A troubled teenager is plagued by visions of a man in a large...
Ben. Donnie Darko.
Rabbit suit.
Yes!
Oh, my Lord.
It's 5-4.
Wow, that was impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready for the final
one?
Go on.
Yeah.
Two slacker friends try to promote their cable show.
Ben.
Gemma.
Ben's
See, now, this is where he could focus.
This is it, yeah.
Wayne's World 2.
Incorrect.
Ah!
Gemma.
Keep reading.
It is two slackers friends try to promote their cable show.
Gemma.
Yes.
Wayne's World.
Correct.
Yeah!
Right. Fair play. Ben fought the whole way through. I was trying to fuck him over, and I haven't.
No, okay.
This is to prove who is the biggest Coreyfile.
So what's the score then? What's the score?
It's 5-5.
Oh, shit. Tiebreaker.
This is it.
Amazing.
Down to the wire.
But remember, it's the first one to shout your name.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A rogue police detective in search of his parents' killer.
Gemma?
Yep.
License to Drive?
No.
Oh.
Ben, are you ready?
Yeah, I want the whole thing.
A rogue, that's what she said. A rogue police detective in search of his parents' killer is murdered and reborn as the ultimate killer.
Corbin Nash?
Correct!
Winner!
Yes!
Winner! Winner!
Yes! two.
That's it.
No round two. Oh. How does it feel?
Holy, that was tense.
Corbin, man.
I've got the butt sweats.
Amazing.
I just shot my load too quickly.
The final score is 6-5, the closest game we've had in a long time.
Congratulations.
License to Drive was close.
It blew out.
I think you'll agree I was sensible.
Yes.
Very. Mm-hmm.
And the final score to say on the first round of Lost the Plot again is Ben 6, Gemma 5.
I think, in fairness, we've all lost the plot today.
Hey. Who would like to come back as the Games Master on the next episode?
Oh, I'll do it.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
So it's me versus Gemma, and stick around for that.
It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It could be something old, it could be something new, it's something we're enjoying right now, and we want you to enjoy it too. I'm suddenly aware that there's no reason for me to say this every episode. Can I just record it once,
no.
Mark, and you can just edit it in each episode?
What, like copy and paste like you do?
Exactly.
Yeah, why not? And Gemma's bit on masturbate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
My bit on competition time.
There we go.
Oh, let's do it.
But can you keep the one where it's competition time?
Yeah, that's it. Brilliant.
Job done.
Yay.
So much good shit to choose from this week, kids. Mark, what have you got?
This is the first time I think anyone has brought this to the show.
Mm.
It's an app.
Oh,
I know.
Is it Uber?
Yeah. It's called Grindr. No, it's not. It's called Quiz Up.
Okay.
So this is an app that you download on your iPhone or any other device that's available, but it's basically an online quiz. And you think to me, that sounds boring, this sounds ridiculous. I've lost about 6 months of my life to this. I'm not joking, because it's got every topic you can think of. So I download the app and I think, okay, it's a quiz. What am I going to do? You play against other people or your friends. So you know Jaws 19, who's going to be working at the Skip Fest?
Yep.
Me and him are always battling about who knows the most about The Office, American and UK. As it stands right now, he is the best in this country on that quiz. He's got the highest score.
Really?
I'm at number 4.
I want to take you both.
I know.
I want to take that challenge, yeah, motherfuckers.
Yes.
A new player has entered the game.
And what you'll do is you'll download the app and you'll choose the topic and then you choose who you want to play. So I can go, right, I've set my profile up. I want to pick Ben. So I'll pick Ben and it'll go, you're both ready. It can be at his house, I can be at mine. And it's the first one to answer the 10 questions.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not just getting it right, it's how quick you answer. Yeah. So extra bonus points. And it'd be like, in which episode did Dwight do this? And at what, you know, what utensil did Michael burn his... And it's so quick and intense.
George Foreman grill.
Yeah.
He's beat me about 150 games and I beat him about 48.
Bloody hell.
And I'm getting better. And when it comes to the UK office, I'm better than him.
Mm-hmm.
But in the whole country, I'm still in the top like 100. But you pick any topic you want. You could pick ice creams. You could pick Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
You could pick anyone you want. You'll only want The Office.
Gemma, I've rang him about 6 times this week and it keeps going to voicemail and now I know why.
Yes, every single time. You can have Lord of the Rings, Blade Runner, but if you are in the thing where you're like, oh, he's not around, I can't play him, it'll tell you anyone that's on Facebook or Twitter that you follow or online at that time, mm-hmm. so you can challenge them to a game.
Nice.
But also you can just play anyone. So you can just pick someone, who's this? Oh, it's Daisy who lives in, where's she from? She's from South Africa. And you can suddenly play a game with her against the best.
Daisy from South Africa.
Yes. I'm not going to do this. But you could do the Babadook, for example, as a quiz. Yeah. Which kid's a prick? The little one. But you know, and it's genuinely the most addictive. You keep building up points. It's so much fun. You will genuinely think, this is crap. Download it and you'll lose hours. It's like when you used to download Champ Manager and you'd lose months and months. Because he'll go to bed and I'll say, all right, Graham, let's have one quick game before he goes to bed. And the next thing you know, it's 4 a.m. and you're beating James, who lives in Russia, and he's 18-6 and you can't go to bed until you beat him.
Right.
A stranger on the internet.
I know this sounds crazy, but I actually want to download this.
Yes.
Yeah,
I really want to download this.
Although, can you just play single player and deal with other humans?
Yep.
That'd be me then.
Yeah, just join your own record. The Office one is incredible. The American Office. And I'm annoyed that I'm not the best right now.
Is it? Do they constantly have brand new questions that pop up?
You'll never get the same question again.
Oh, I want to play.
I'm in.
Both of them are sitting in now downloading the app and they're not going to give us a recommendation.
So when I'm bored at work on Monday.
Yes. Hello.
Not that I ever get bored at work.
Never.
If anyone from my work is listening, I'm constantly busy.
Always. But it's called Quiz Up and it's a free app and you'll lose hours of your life.
I look forward to losing a lot of time.
So on that then, Gemma, what have you lost some time on this week?
Well, I've gone for a mini series that's currently showing on Amazon Prime, and it's just recently got an Emmy nomination.
Here we are.
It's called The Act.
Oh, yes.
We talked about this on the last episode off air.
So fucking good.
Mm-hmm. So when I went home, I decided to download the series, and it took me probably about 3 days to binge.
absolutely incredible. It's based on a true crime story that is extraordinary to believe that it all happened. And it stars Patricia Arquette and Emmy-nominated Joey King as mother and daughter Dee Dee and Gypsy Rose Blanchard. So I'm going to try and say as little about the case as possible, because I urge anybody to go out and actually look at what the hell happened, because you ain't going to believe this. So Dee Dee is a full-time carer to Gypsy Rose, a teenager who is wheelchair-bound and suffers all sorts of illnesses. So she's a leukemia survivor. She's allergic to sugar. She's had her salivary glands removed, and she's got the mind of a seven-year-old. So Dee Dee tirelessly looks after her kid with the generous help of cash and gift donations from people all across the country who falls in love with this poor kid. But as the story opens up with both individuals missing from their home, only to discover that Dee Dee is murdered in her own bed, Gypsy is missing. So who did this, and where's Gypsy? And that's where I'm going to say about what's happening with the story.
You
because
proper juiced me up. Yeah.
Don't, you can't say any more.
No.
Massive spoiler.
Exactly. So what I'm going to do is actually talk about the performances. Mm-hmm. So Patricia Arquette, let's face it, she's one of the greatest actresses of our time.
Hell yes.
As I was watching this, I completely immersed myself in her character and I forgot I was watching Patricia Arquette. Mm-hmm. She is that good. I'm shocked she didn't get a nomination,
she did.
For another TV show.
She got it for both.
Did she?
She got Best Leading Actress for Escape from Dannemora, Escape at Dannemora, and Best Supporting Actress for The Act.
Then justice has been done. Yeah. Thank goodness. She is incredible. Mark, you will absolutely love her in this. And Joey King, a young up-and-coming actress who I'm really excited for her career, and she ultimately steals the whole goddamn thing.
She's amazing. Did you see the first season of Fargo, the TV series? Do you remember Colin Hanks's daughter in that? That's Joey King.
Oh.
She's brilliant in this show.
And she's phenomenal in this. So she ultimately takes every single scene that she's in. We also see Alex Tromboli from American Vandal in it as the boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus.
You think he's a weasel in American Vandal. May I present the act?
Yeah, man, he's weird, isn't he?
Yeah, oh, creepy as fuck. But it's just one of those shows where it's... I'm trying to think of whether to read the story first and then watch this show, or watch this show and then read the story first. I'd probably say go for the former, because the truth is stranger than fiction sometimes. And I think this dramatization is probably one of the best true crime dramatizations I've seen. I did watch Dirty John on Netflix. It was okay, but I wasn't massively impressed. But this ticks every single box in terms of the delivery of the story and the overall performances. It's absolutely phenomenal.
It is amazing. And as well as reading up on the story, there's a documentary about it called Mommy, Dead and Dearest.
I'm going to be watching this.
Yeah, watch the documentary too. It's a fucking incredible story. Mm-hmm. But just the last thing to say on it is just to go back to Joey King. She's incredible. And that voice she puts on, that little high-pitched voice all the way through. Yeah, like a little girl.
Like a Disney princess.
It's so weird, isn't it?
Yeah, but the development of how she takes on Gypsy Rose.
Yeah.
She's not an old woman. Like, she's a young girl. She is a young girl. And it's almost like a delivery of performance that I would expect to see something of the likes of Meryl Streep to deliver.
Wow. It's top big
notch.
Words.
It's top notch.
It's that believable.
How many episodes?
There's
like eight
ten,
or something.
Eight
ten.
Or ten.
Yeah,
eight
yeah,
or
yeah.
ten.
About an hour each.
50 minutes, but it doesn't feel like that. And you've got the likes of Chloe Sevigny.
Yeah, Chloe Sevigny's in it. Yeah, she's
is
great.
Is it closed off, or are we going to get more?
No.
It's a true story.
Perfect.
From beginning to end, trust me, you'll be entranced.
It's brilliant.
Amazon Prime.
Yep.
And it's not one of those ones where you have to pay for
you
it.
You do have to pay
what?
For it, I'm afraid.
Jesus.
But it's worth every single goddamn penny.
Why have you got to pay for it? Isn't it like a free trial from a week or something? Yes.
You can get a free trial.
Yes.
Stick around that, yeah.
I'll watch it. I don't know why. Even if it's $2.99, I'm like, no, I don't want to.
I don't want to.
I'll spend £12 a month on Amazon or whatever it is, and then this. But no, I'm not paying more. Principles.
Well, that leads me beautifully into my choice, for which I used a free trial of something called Viewster through Amazon Prime to watch. Viewster has a lot of Japanese anime series.
Oh.
So my particular choice this time around is a show called Paranoia Agent.
Right.
Which I'm sure neither of you will have seen.
No, please tell me more.
But it's your favourite, isn't it, Mark? It's an anime series from 2004, and it was directed by the late Satoshi Kon, who was also responsible for Paprika, which we rewatched a while back. The plot revolves around a couple of detectives assigned to investigate a mysterious criminal known as Little Slugger, who is a young boy wearing a baseball cap, inline skates, and he carries a baseball bat with which he attacks his victims. And the first half of the series focuses on a series of individuals linked to the attacks, including a delusional cartoonist, a sleazy journalist, journalist, a corrupt cop, an amnesiac teenager, and a prostitute with a split personality.
Jesus.
So yeah, it's weird. The second half of the series gets even more experimental and unpredictable from that. For an example, there's one episode that's about three people who meet each other online and join in a suicide pact, and the whole episode is the three of them trying to attempt suicide in a series of increasingly slapstick ways. It's bizarrely comedic and funny. It's like fucking Benny Hill. but three people trying to off himself. The show is so weird.
Wow.
It's twisty and weird as hell. I've even heard it compared to the work of David Lynch.
Oh my God, I need to watch this.
People say it's got a little bit of Twin Peaks about it.
Wow.
It's got gorgeous visuals, as you would expect with something directed by Satoshi Kon, Matter Paprika. Yeah. We knew how beautiful that was. His work always looks amazing, but the words are just as important as the visuals. His work always has so much going on in the subtext. There's always a deeper meaning to everything. And the show also has one of the weirdest intro sequences I've ever seen. It has this really jolly, lovely music that is a proper earworm. It'll stay in your head for days. And then all the characters individually appear on the screen, laughing maniacally, just going, ha 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 ha. All of them, one after another, for no reason. It's mental.
It's not actually mental.
It is actually mental, yeah. I think. It's utterly, utterly disturbing, but brilliant, and it just draws you in. The series only ran for 13 episodes. It always appears on any of those lists. If you look up best anime of all time, best anime TV series, it's in there without fail. I don't want to say much more about it. It's for something people who like anime like weird shit. They need to go and discover it. And as I say, you can buy it on DVD, or you can just sign up to Viewsta for the free trial, which I think even if you pay for it afterwards, it's like $2.99 or something.
Shouldn't have to,
Mark. No. I'm quite right. No. You can get through it. It's only 13 episodes. Get through it in the free week, then fuck it off.
Yes.
That's what I did.
Good work.
But get involved.
I really want to see this.
Paranoia Agent. Weird as fuck. Great fun.
Out of the two recommendations, they're very different. And I'm going to have to end up paying for them, I reckon. I reckon I'll forget to cancel my subscription. That's what always happens. Because then you put your card details in and then forget, and then you get charged.
Do you want to know the little cheat code, the life hack for that?
Oh.
If you take one of these free subscriptions or whatever, it's free trials, cancel immediately after you've signed up, and then it still gives you the week's trial. It doesn't cancel it there and then. You still get the week, so cancel as soon as you've booked
There's your recommendation.
That's your real recommendation.
That tops every single recommendation we've bought today.
He's cancelled the subscription. What have you done? That's amazing. Wow.
We've got some really great recommendations on this episode.
And we've got even more from our listeners. So on Facebook, our old friend Sarah Buddery, she's currently obsessed with the Flight of the Conchords Live in London album. The new songs are just as great as the old ones, and it makes her laugh out loud on her commute.
Love Flight of the Conchords so much.
As do I, but I still haven't seen the Live in London show, actually.
No, me neither. Crazy. I did see them, I think, 2009, 2008. I think they were playing in Birmingham, and their live show's hilarious. You've heard the song so many times on the TV show, but it still manages to make you laugh.
Amazing. On Twitter, Daniel Turner at JoePineapple75. He's recommended a graphic novel called Tetris by Box Brown. The story of how Tetris emerged from the Soviet Union in the 80s, but it also serves as a history of gaming itself, covering the story of Nintendo, Sega, Atari, and more.
Wow.
That's great, because I've read loads of books about Sega, Nintendo, Atari individually, proper, you know, non-fiction books.
Yes.
So to read a graphic novel version of it, that sounds amazing. I'm definitely in for that. I'm going to download that. James Gain on Twitter said, I'd like to recommend the Retro Gaming Museum in Leicester. Mark, you told me about this the other day.
This is mental, right?
Yeah.
We've lived here for how many years? 20,
too many.
Loads.
Yeah.
And this exists.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about it, man. Is it every games console ever?
This is what James says. James says, pretty much every game and console you can imagine, all under one roof. It's brilliant. I've not been yet.
No.
I'm going to tell my little brother about it because I think he'll be all over it. We're going to go and check it out.
I'm up for going Skipfest weekend on the Sunday if we're not too tired and hungover. And just play some Mario Kart. But I saw some pictures after I saw this tweet, and it's literally, they've got everything. You name it, they've got the consoles, and they've got this library wall of all like Dreamcast. And it's not just like, the couple. A to Z of everything. SNES, Mega Drive, Master System, Lynx.
Gosh, I need to get
unbelievable.
In on this.
That's incredible. And even really older things.
Yeah.
Like, Sinclair.
Yeah. Amstrad.
And all that kind of shit. Yeah.
Commodore 64.
Oh, Amiga.
You'd pay your money, you'd go there, and they'd be like, right, what do you want to play? And you'd be like, the Sinclair. Who made that again? I can't remember the
name.
It's the ZX Spectrum.
Yeah. Sinclair.
And you're like, okay, cool. And you pay your 10 quid to play. And it does it pixel by pixel, doesn't it, on the cassette. And you'd be like, I've just spent 20 quid. And it'll get fucked. Because I remember my parents bought me one, and it would die so many times.
Oh, God.
I just want to play Paperboy, Mum. You know, just mental.
My Commodore 64 having to use a tape, because set tape for games was a fucking nightmare.
Absolutely horrendous.
But it was amazing at the time.
Yeah. Great.
It was like, this is the future we're living in right now, kids.
Wow.
Did you ever play the tape in like a hi-fi?
No.
And it would play it and go...
I thought it would be like one of those things like when you play Ozzy Osbourne backwards and told you to worship Satan.
Yeah, it's
Outrun took about an hour and a half to like load, and then it was amazing.
Oh, Outrun's cool. It always like crash if you
and
actually crashed.
The music you had to put in your cassette player at home and push play while the game was
simultaneously
playing.
Yeah.
What?
How everyone else is listening going, these guys are well old. Sorry to the public out there who are playing on your brand new PS4 and whatever, but you know, oh well.
I'm going off on a slight tangent here, but it's amazing to think that there is more computing power in your phone that's in your pocket than there was in the spaceship that went to Mars.
I know.
Whatever, how many, 50 years ago?
My gosh.
Mental.
That's weird. That's so weird.
There's more power in your fucking iPhone than in Apollo 11.
Yeah.
That's mental.
No, not accepting it.
What it just shows, hell? If you've got an iPhone, you can achieve anything.
Well. That's a great advert for Apple. I love that.
And Haribo.
of course.
Same thing.
If you've got a pocket full of Haribo, you can achieve everything. Especially getting kids into your van.
If that doesn't work, tell him you've got puppies. Kids love puppies.
He knows.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know that myself,
Speaking
Gemma.
From experience Clearly. There.
Come and stroke them.
All right.
But anyway.
Enough
No. moving
Pino Bingo Mars.
Swiftly on.
Yes.
Moving on to Instagram. Greg Waterworth, a.k.a. Destro Vega, has said the film Teen Spirit. Elle Fanning gives a remarkable performance about a small town girl with a passion for music who enters a singing competition. First time director Max Minghella shows off great visual style. Now, I don't think this is out in the UK yet, so we won't have seen it. But I've heard good things. Ooh. And Max Minghella directing it.
Is that Anthony Minghella related?
His son, yes, his son. And he's, you know, he's one of the stars of Handmaid's Tale, isn't he?
He's the dude in that.
Fair play.
So that sounds pretty interesting. A book we've got next from Warren John Hughes, at Warren John Hughes, another old friend of ours, Wild and Crazy Guys by Nick DeSemlin, is a brilliant read. The best book about 80s comedy. Some brilliant stories about Chevy Chase, Bill Murray, Eddie Murphy, Steve Martin, and loads more.
Oh my God.
Cool.
I've ordered it.
Yeah.
Because that's right up my street. That is fucking amazing.
They were the kings back in the day.
Hell yeah. Right, now our next recommendation, I think, might lead us to have a little bit of a chat of our own.
Come on.
Another old friend of ours, Foxy Snob, at Foxy Snob. She started off by saying, I'm sure Dave Smith from Wigan would agree. Now, Foxy Snob's partner, he's changed his name on Twitter to Dave Smith from Wigan.
I love it.
Based on something daft we said on the last episode.
That is so magnet.
Thanks for that. It's Mike, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it was pretty magnet that,
yeah.
But anyway, she's carried on by saying it has to be Stranger Things 3. It's funny, heartbreaking, and filled with 80s nostalgia. Have we all seen all of season 3 of Stranger Things yet?
Yes.
No.
You
what?
Dongle.
But
I
will leave the room while you two talk.
I'm serious. We won't spoil anything. How much have you seen?
Episode 2.
Fucking hell, dude.
I know. With nothing.
Dude, when you download this game,
you will stop playing that fucking game.
Trust me. You say it.
You know what?
I'm like,
you
Stranger Things is one of the best things ever. Download Quiz Up.
Right.
Fuck Stranger Things.
No. Fuck Quiz Up.
Correct.
I'm sorry.
It's incredible, isn't it, Gemma?
It's wonderful. I think it might be the best season.
It's my favourite. Mm-hmm. It's my favourite. I think all the cast are brilliant. I love the inclusion of Maya Hawke as a new character, the daughter of Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman.
Yeah.
And she is
People are saying she's phenomenal.
She's phenomenal, and she is her mother's daughter.
Yeah.
She has the same mannerisms, the same facial expressions, the exact same voice, and the same laugh.
Yeah. Think of the career she's got ahead of her.
She's so good. She's brilliant, isn't she?
I think Robin is probably my favourite character from season 3. And, you know, she's strong, she's smart, she's quippy, and the relationship with her and Steve too, like that development, which I won't spoil, don't you worry.
I'll forget.
That's true, actually.
But we don't want to spoil it for anyone else who hasn't seen it.
Yeah, of course, But a formidable team.
Yeah, they're absolutely brilliant. I think it's the most action-packed season. I think it's the funniest season.
Yes. Also the most violent season.
Yes, it is quite brutal in parts. My only kind of slight downside is I'm not sure what they're doing with Hopper. They've made him into a bit of a comedy buffoon.
Like a Magnum PI.
Yeah, who just shouts constantly.
Ah, oh, you goddamn kids with your kissing and your rules.
You know, he was a bit of kind of a put-upon badass before, but now he's just a like Bluto from fucking Popeye now.
Nice.
Yes. Oh
but
my god.
He's still great because David Harbour rules, but I think they're not writing him particularly well. But it's fantastic, dude. Yeah. Get on it, man.
Also,
I know you're playing this game, right? I get you're addicted to this, dude. But you were the one who championed Stranger Things. I remember season one. I wasn't that bothered about it, but you jizzed over it massively. I've still got it in my eyes.
It doesn't make sense, but it's been a busy week with this game, and I need to be the best in the country.
No.
Have you seen King of Kong? Right.
Yeah.
Mark versus Jaws 19. Whoever gets the top score, there's about to be a kill screen. Fuck everything else. I don't care about Stranger Things.
Right.
It will come back.
You have to care about Stranger Things, and I defy you not to even have an ounce of heartbreak and tears falling out of those eyes of yours that are clearly glued on
Quizzer. I've heard as well. It closes beautifully. And they're filming series 4 in October.
They are going to be doing season 4.
And there's a little kind of a little cliffhanger-y type ending. We don't know how it's going to go. Oh, it's good shit.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
You know I'm going to watch it.
Just do it now then.
Watch it in like 3 years' time. Quiz fucking up.
Yeah. Next episode, why has it not gone out on time? Yeah. Why is it not edited? Why is Skipfest not happening anymore?
When we come up with top three, you're just going to be like, I haven't bought anything, I'm afraid, but I've got the highest score in Hull.
But I'll tell you the top three. Me.
Fucking hell.
Well, thank you, Lorna, for bringing it. We wanted someone to bring it.
We did. Thank you very much. On Facebook, Susie Bennison has said, I saw the Chemical Brothers at the Eden Project.
Nice.
They tore the place a new one. Best gig of the year so far.
Oh.
I must admit, I didn't even know they were still going. The last song of theirs I heard was Block Rockin' Beats.
Oh, that was like 97. Yeah.
They were great back in the day. Orbital. They used to be at all these festivals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were great live.
I've seen them at a couple of festivals and their live shows or something else. Like hearing Galvanize Out of Control live. Yeah. Amazing.
Oh, excellent. So good.
On Twitter, Saxon Dog at Saxon Dog has said the movie Crawl, high tension, under 90 minutes. Mark, that's for you. And the scares are done correctly and in the right places. Definitely worth it. Have you guys seen this or heard of this?
I've only seen a trailer. I think it's behind the team of Don't Breathe. I think Sam Raimi might have some involvement with
this. Sam Raimi produced it, I believe.
There you go.
It stars the lass who was in Skins.
K.S.
Scolidario, yeah. And it's about, I think there's a flood and then her and her dad have to escape a load of alligators.
Yeah.
Oh.
And people are saying as far as wacky horror films go, it's actually a pretty good one.
Yeah.
I'm hearing good
trailer looks decent.
Sounds cool.
Mm-hmm. Daniel McNally at Danny McNally said, I watched Trinkets on Netflix and it was a pretty good show. Haven't heard many people talk about it, which is a shame. I hadn't heard of this, so I looked it up. It's kind of like a teen soap.
Okay.
So it's not my cup of tea, but Danielle says it's good and I'm sure a lot of people out there will agree.
Awesome.
And then finally on Facebook, Russell Hewitt has said, Too Old to Die Young on Amazon Prime. 10 feature-length episodes from Nicholas Winding Refn and all the horrendous beauty he brings with it. If you have the patience, you'll love it. Now, I don't have the patience. Because I texted you about this the other day, didn't I, Mark?
Yes.
I watched the first episode, what I should more accurately say is I watched the first 10 minutes of the first episode and turned it the fuck off.
What happened?
It was the worst, most pretentious shit I've ever seen. So I'm glad you like it, Russell, and I've no doubt there are plenty of other people who do. It's fucking awful.
Is it like Neon Demon?
It's like Only God Forgives.
Oh, no!
Yep. Yeah, it's basically Only God Forgives the TV series. Every scene is interminably long. Every scene goes on 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 90 seconds longer than it should. A lot of it is just Miles Teller staring at things.
Oh, I don't like Miles Teller.
I don't really like Miles Teller either, especially don't like him wordlessly staring at things.
Is it like Terrence Malick?
Yeah, it is. It's like a more pretentious Terrence Malick.
Oh, shit.
It's fucking horrendous. And I urged you, Mark, I said to you, watch the first 10 minutes of the first episode, just see what you mean. Now, of course you haven't, because you're playing Quiz Up.
Yeah, sorry. I don't reply now. I'm like, whatever, Quiz Up. Yeah.
But Gemma, I want you to go away and watch. Okay. Try and watch the first episode of this to see if we're on the same page.
Okay.
Because I know you and I are on the same page about Ari Aster, the director of Hereditary and Midsommar, because you went to see Midsommar, didn't you?
Unfortunately.
Which everyone is saying is amazing. Thought it was?
I thought it was shit.
Dog shit.
I think it's one of the worst films this year. I won't deny, I was saying this to the guys earlier, I won't deny the film is beautiful to watch. The cinematography is astounding. The use of colour, it is gorgeous. It's absolutely beautiful to look at. But that where it stops. Mm-hmm. The story is pretentious. It's so far up its own arse, it might as well be using like a puppet up the rectum. I don't know. And it has possibly one of the most weirdest scenes that I think was supposed to be used for horror effect, in which, no joke of a lie, a whole entire cinema was gut belly laughing at.
But that's the same as Hereditary. When Mark and I went to see Hereditary and that bit when all the nude people came out, people started laughing.
Yeah.
It's not supposed to be a comedy.
Oh.
May I shock you? nude people were there when the big laughs were happening.
Bonus.
Yeah. There was boners in that bit as well. Yeah.
He loves old people with their knobs out.
Brilliant. Who doesn't?
Oh, well, hey, Mark.
That's
Mark,
my recommendation Mark. Next time.
Wasn't just knobs I saw.
Oh, Quims as well.
Oh, it's Quimcast.
Equal opportunity, though. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Well,
it's 2019, people. Yeah. I don't just want knobs, I want Quims.
There we go.
You know what I mean?
Quimfest.
That's all I ask for. But that's what I'm saying. Like, we seem to be in the minority of people who don't like Ari Aster's work. People, all the critics love Hereditary, love Midsommar. Yeah. Not a fan. So I think you will watch Too Old to Die Young and think you've got too little life to watch that shit, quite frankly.
I can't.
Why should you?
I know, I can't, and I can wait for this.
The scary thing is, Gemma will watch it, love it, and next week bring it back as a recommendation and be like, it was actually genius. Hey. You didn't get it, Ben. After the first 10 minutes,
Mark,
it suddenly glows amazing.
Mark, I've seen Only God Forgives, and I wish I hadn't seen Only
God
Forgives.
God hasn't forgiven him for that.
That's true.
That's the truth, so...
And that's all the selections we've had come in from the listeners this week. But you can get us again on the next episode, please do, at Skip to the End Podcast, or on facebook.com/Skip to the End Podcast, Instagram at Skip to the End Podcast, or email us your suggestions, podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End Podcast. I don't want to scare you, but we are 1 month out from Skipfest.
I think I'm going to be sick.
It's amazing.
And we have not done any prep.
No. It's okay. It'll be alright on the night.
Yeah, we'll do it on the night.
Oh, no. Oh, don't say that.
Have you seen the documentary Fire Festival? You think that's poor and that's how not to do a festival, you wait. Hold your beer. We're here.
That's the way to sell it.
It's going to be a cross between Fire Festival and Anvil.
It'll be all right.
Of course it will.
Okay.
Stay tuned on social media this week for suggestions on a playlist where you can submit your songs.
Yeah.
We want people to dress how they want,
but
we encourage Hawaiian shirts.
Yeah, because we've heard a thing that a few of the Skip fam are going to be hitting up some cool Hawaiian shirts. So
yeah.
As many of you want to put on a Hawaiian shirt, do it, and the best one gets a prize.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wicked. That sounds great.
Yeah. And there you go. That counts as planning. We've done some prep now. Well done, lads.
And genuinely, if you are turning up, you're going to get some stuff that's only available on that night for attending.
Oh,
that's teasing. True.
Imagine the tat you're going to get.
Yeah.
It's going to be unreal.
Is it going to be Krampus level tat?
Oh, you better believe it.
I want some like rock with Skip to the End in it. That would be cool, actually.
Or just a rock with Skip to the End written on it.
I want some laptop stickers with Skip to the End on.
We'll get you that.
Yeah. I want some headbands.
Well, if you want.
I want a rubber bracelet with Skip to the End round.
But you are going to get some goody stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
Goody bags. Is that what you say? Like a booty bag.
I don't
know what a booty bag is.
Well, when we went to like a kid's party and you were at school, at the end.
Party bag?
Yeah, like a booty bag on the way
out. I call it a party bag. Oh. Or a gift bag. A booty bag was, you were abused.
Yeah. He said to me, come on, have this booty bag. And then, I don't know what happened.
They proceeded to show his ass.
He had this like tissue over my mouth. And next thing I knew, I woke up and don't remember anything. But anyway, I don't know.
How is your Uncle Dave anyway?
He's nearly done his 20 years in prison.
Jeez.
So he'll be at Skipfest.
Brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Fun.
Get your photo with Uncle Dave.
I'm sure he'll offer you a booty bag.
Yeah.
Can't hardly wait.
And you said we weren't planning.
There we go.
It's done. We've nailed it.
Brilliant.
3 hours of that.
That's 1 month to go, guys.
Let's talk about something that is actually happening the next episode.
Oh, crikey.
Hold up.
Wait, who picked the next topic?
It was me.
Go on, Jem, what we got?
Because we're talking about our top three party movies.
Party on, dude.
That's amazing.
That's very good. And quite broad as well, you know. There's a lot of people in there. Which means we're going to pick a lot of films we haven't done to death already. Marvellous. What's our next rewatch?
It's going to be Event Horizon.
Oh, man. I'm seriously excited for that, for real.
Yeah, it's going to be good. It's long, it's dark, and it's fucking scary.
Yeah.
But I don't want to talk about it too much because you'll tune in 2 weeks to hear more.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Who are we masturbating over, Gemma?
That's a good question. We're going to be masturbating over Brian De Palma.
See, that's a big one for me. Brian De Palma, his name doesn't live up there, I think, with modern filmgoers in the same way that Tarantino or Spielberg does. But he directed things like Scarface, The Untouchables, Carrie. But he's done a lot of good things. So that's going to be an interesting one as well. So please do send us your choices there. Our main review is going to be Hobbs and Shaw.
Which,
Mark's pulling a face. But I think the trailer looks to me like it could be a Mission Impossible level bit of craziness.
I'm up for it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good bit of fun for real.
Yeah, also my boy Statham. I'm going to get Stathamed.
Yeah.
Can't wait.
The Rock. Dwayne I'm going to get rocked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Got Roman Reigns in there too. I'm sure he'll spear a Superman.
That's what my uncle used to say.
Brilliant.
Boy, boy, you're going to get Romaned.
Get your booty bag out.
Yeah. That's a good episode, I think.
Yeah, I hope so. Touch wood.
Yes, he touched my wood. But anyway,
gee.
It's also the last episode before Skip Fest.
It is.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. So we really do have to finish the prep in 2 weeks.
I know, we do. Guys. We'll be all right.
Can't do it night before.
No shit show.
It's going to be. Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Yes, me too.
Cool.
Me three.
We'll see you in 2 weeks.